space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you. in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one, but four separate chat rooms. I gotta take a breath every time I say that. Anyway, while you're over there at the Super chat room, scroll down there and look for the People for People Radio Network. Click on that link over there and go there and tell them that crazy haired Shaziz guy said hi to you. I got some exciting news here in a little bit, but in the meantime, I got to say my crazy stuff first. Speaking of that, go over there and check out Wolf Spirit Radio as well. There's a lot of other affiliated networks out there. We don't mention a whole lot, but you can always Google them up and So if you're having any problems with any radio players or anything like that, you can just jump on. There's so many different platforms you can actually listen to. So with that said, I threw a link in the chat to a video, which didn't look like it showed up over there, but it did look like it showed up over there. Anyway, it's a history of electricity. So I said in the little deal down there, special guest there today. Guess what? I got part of the dream team here. Yeah, won them all the way from what? Holland?
Netherlands.
Oh, the Netherlands. Yeah. The Netherlands. Woohoo! Guess what? Say hi to Jermaine. Say hi, Jermaine.
Hello, hello.
So I got Jermaine here, and that's pretty cool, man. He got to come all the way over here from the Netherlands and hang out with somebody else who might just very well be here, too. Who's that?
Raymond Head, Boomer Drywall from Boomtown Laboratories.
Woohoo! So, and sooner or later, I guess, right in the middle of the show, that's when old Thomas come rolling up in here. He's from Arkansas? No, it's
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, Tulsa,
he's
going to
kill me when I hear that I said he came from Arkansas.
Thomas Anderson. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, so anyway, I just want to kind of run by these guys and see what kind of projects they're working on, and we're just going to let this show take on a life of its own, so I hope everybody stays tuned and you enjoy the show. Your two-stage oscillator, Raymond.
Oh, that's why I had Jermaine come over to the United States to be with me to work on it. This boy is an absolute genius when it comes to making handmade electromagnets. And he offered to help me with this thing. So his father and I got together it was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I went over there and spent 3 weeks with them to get to know the family. And, oh, the most amazing people I've ever met in my daggone life. I mean, his father was like my little brother from day one. And his mother is an absolute angel in the kitchen. And
there's that Thomas guy.
There he is, Thomas Anderson, folks. Say hi, Thomas.
All right, so everybody say hi to Thomas. He's here. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, yeah. Thomas. He came right in the middle of the show. Scree! Did you hear that door? I gotta grease that thing. At least it ain't the chair.
There you go.
Yeah, anyway, so, I wished I would have went over to the Netherlands. I've never been over there before.
Oh, you gotta go. The cleanest place I've ever been in my life. Shazit, I spent 3 weeks and 3 days there. I saw one plastic bag on the side of the road, and 2 hours later it was gone.
Well, Jermaine say yesterday that it was like a culture shock being over here, so he probably seen the way the people throw crap
all over the road. I pointed that out to him. To him, it's like living in a dump. Not quite that bad, but
I'm a kind of a nature freak too, so yeah. I don't like it when people are throwing trash out all over the place. Besides that, a lot of that's recyclable, man.
Yeah, it is. It really and truly is. It's unreal.
So, how you doing there, Thomas? Want to say hi to everybody?
No.
Thomas don't want to say hi to everybody. He's antisocial.
There you go.
So anyway, on your two-stage oscillator, what you guys been working on?
So what we've been trying to do is, we know the two-stage oscillator puts out a lot of energy. What we're trying to do is measure it and see what the percentage of efficiency. And we're going to try to actually power it using electromagnets and permanent magnets. We've got a, 205-pound pull and push magnet, permanent magnet on the two-stage oscillator, and Jermaine made a electromagnet himself, and I mean, this thing is, we don't even know what it'll pull, do we? But it is super powerful. You cannot hold it. I mean, you can't, when he energizes it, we cannot pull
it.
What
did you guys actually use for your electromagnet?
Oh, that's amazing. Like I said, Jermaine is he's a genius. So we took a piece of 1¼-inch plastic PVC pipe and took, I own the drywall company, we put in ceilings, and we used 12-gauge galvanized wire to hang my ceilings. Well, I had a bunch of scrap, so we cut a bunch of pieces about 6 inches long, drove it down in a 5-inch piece of pipe, plastic pipe, until it was so tight we had to hammer them in. In some cases, we even threatened to grease them so they go in better. But we have gotten it so tight, and the reason we did a 5-inch pipe and 6-inch wire is so that we'd have a half inch sticking out both sides, and we wrap tape around that as tight as we could get it, and then we cut the plastic pipe off, and then he proceeded to wrap it with copper.
Electrical tape first.
Yeah, he wrapped it with electrical tape first to hold it in shape, and then we put it in my lathe and took 18 gauge enameled wire. A lot of people call it magnet wire, but I don't see any magnetism to it. Anyway,
I was wondering why they did that.
People call it magnet wire because they use a magnet to make electricity, but there is no magnetism in the wire. But anyway, it's enameled wire in 18 gauge, and we wrapped it, what, six layers?
Six layers, yeah.
Six layers, and this thing, I mean, when we fired it off, it just snatched right out of his hand, and it boy. Hey. Oh, man, it's something else. But we're using it so that as the pendulum comes down, the way we've got it set up, it fires at a certain deal, and we're trying to keep everything, and Thomas pointed this out to me, too. I'm not electronic. Okay, I don't understand electronics. I mean, I know the parts, I know the theories behind different things, but I don't know it well enough to do anything electronically. So we're trying to do everything as mechanically as possible because most people understand mechanics.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're building our own switch, mechanical switch. It's not a reed switch. We've got a couple of reed switches. Jermaine knows how to use them. I don't. So we're still trying to keep everything as mechanical as possible. We've come up with our own design, a switch that actually will operate the two-stage oscillator, and we can adjust it to a fraction of an inch. We're talking like 1/128th of an inch before it makes contact, which is what we need. We need the pendulum to pass bottom dead center before it fires in both directions. And that was a challenge and a half, and we got one that was pretty close. But now we've, in our heads and on paper, we've refined that one. We're getting ready for when we get back to Texas. We're going to build that one real quick.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to be impressed on how well it will work.
And how adjustable it is.
Yeah, oh, yes. That's what they're really going to be impressed by, is how adjustable, how finite you can adjust this thing. It's so... I mean, it's unbelievable. Yet, it's non-electronic. Anybody can do it.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how that shows up, and we'll post the videos out here to help people get a chance to take a peek at.
Right.
What's your YouTube channel there, Raymond?
Oh, YouTube is R-H-E-A-D, Head, 100.
What's yours, Jermaine?
Jermaine's Experiment Lab.
Yeah, go over and check out Jermaine and Raymond's, especially Jermaine. You need a whole lot more subscribers on your channel.
Yes, he does. He does some fantastic work. You know what gets me about Jermaine? He does things that a lot of people do, you know? But he put that little artistic touch in it. The boy doesn't grab something and just wrap wire around it. I mean, he is very meticulous and makes sure every layer is perfect. He built this rocking arm deal, and he put it on his website, and you can see all the woodwork that he helped built to put it together. It's all trimmed and routed around, and the boy is amazing.
I've seen some of his craftsmanship on the deal. Plus, I got the picture that he drew of me from the other picture. That's pretty doggone impressive. Yes. You're one talented young man, I'll tell you
very
that.
Talented. Boy graduated when he was 16 years old from high school. He is now 17. He will turn 18 in January, and has already completed 2 years of his first college courses.
Wow!
What
do you study in
less than a year?
Mechanical, electrical engineering.
Right on.
The courses themselves, the lessons, he has completed 2 years of college in 1 year. Liz, I mean, the boy is an absolute genius.
That's awesome. On those electromagnets, you should try it. Cut off the top of those microwave oven transformers.
Uh-huh.
When you pulse those with those circuits that I showed you yesterday,
right.
Man, you can't pull that thing loose. It's got a lot of power on it. It's already... So if you're ever into wanting to make you a homemade electromagnet, that's a good one right there. Just short. Cut off the very top. Or the base. It would be the bottom that bolts to the microwave. But I thought I'd mention
Jermaine and I just did a little experiment on an electromagnet that I had bought. It pulled 850 pounds.
Holy smokes.
What's better?
Heather?
Okay.
I was just saying 850
pounds. Well, you looked at the computer.
No, I was trying to. I was looking that way and that way.
I bought this electromagnet to pull 850 pounds, and Jermaine made that one magnet, right?
Yeah.
Now, it was straight pull. Where the one I bought was electric, it was a bipole.
Yeah, it wasn't an I-core.
Right.
I-shaped core,
right.
Like a transformer.
In other words, the North and South Pole were on the same end of the magnet.
Yeah.
So we cut the two legs off to where it was North and South on each end, right? It didn't have half the power of the one he made.
Wow.
Not half the power. When you cut the ends off of a bipole, I mean it reduces its power unbelievably.
Drastically
reduces.
So I'm working on trying to get I'm gonna get one of them circuits for induction heating. I'm still wanting to build that water engine.
Okay. So
what I'm wanting to do is get a milling machine and start making. I want to build from top to bottom my own engine.
Right.
If you could visualize an induction heater being around the head you can see where I cut off all these fins off of this thing right here. Well, that's so that you could run that induction coil around there, which whenever you fire that up, we could bring that up to about 300 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
And so you said water boils at 212 degrees
at sea level.
Yeah. Okay, so if I bring this cylinder up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, then when I inject small quantities of water in using a sonic vaporizer like this right here.
You know, the amazing thing is you don't need 350 degrees. At water boils at sea level, okay? Sea level, at 212 degrees. Now, at sea level, at 235 degrees, you have 20 PSI, which is more than sufficient pressure to power an automobile.
Well, there's a method to my madness.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is, if you build a motor out of plastic, there are many, many different plastics that are extremely durable, they're friction-free, and have a melting temperature of over 600 degrees, so you could build the entire motor out of plastic and be the most efficient motor you've ever talked about.
But there's a method to my madness, because just like a diesel engine runs off a compression ignition, I want that temperature to stay up there to keep the fuel, as the fuel is coming out of a preheated tank going in through this induction coil, then it will be heating it up even further. So by the time it gets to the atomizer, then it breaks it down yet even further. And by the time it gets up to the sonic vaporizer, before it actually goes into the intake, it's already down in its finest molecule. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So that once that hits it inside that hot cylinder, it will instantaneously superheat and flash into
you
steam.
You want the smallest molecule of water.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Not water vapor. That's the total secret. You want to put the molecule of water in there, and then you want to turn it to a water vapor, which expands. And this is another thing about steam. You're an old Navy man with steam engines, right?
Yeah, we run 650 PSI to 1250 PSI boiler.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter how little heat or how much heat you put in water. When a molecule of steam, of water, decides to become steam, it does not go, oh, I'm expanding, I'm a hot. No, it goes boom.
Yeah, that's
it
what
is
I'm
like
about.
A stick of dynamite. It is almost instantaneous that one molecule bursts into steam. And it expands 1,600 times its size. So what you have is billions of little atomic explosions.
Yeah.
Going off all at this simultaneously over and over and over again. That's where the steam engine and what you're talking about, making the cylinder hot. Okay. And what I'm talking about using the plastics is it's simple. The plastic can be the plastics that Thomas and I were talking about to build this engine out of. They're very durable. They're workable. You can cut them with a saw. You can cut them with a knife. You can cut them with a CNC milling machine. So you could build the entire engine except your cooling section, because these plastics are not very good at transferring heat.
Yeah,
so
see,
they would hold any heat that you put in the cylinder.
Well, what I want is the cylinder to be its own sleeve with an insulated, the block itself, you won't transfer heat from, the only place you need heat in an internal combustion engine is in the cylinder.
Right, exactly.
So, anyway, in phase two of that, if you see I'm holding up right here, got this electric motor on there, visualize one of the pulse DC direct drive motors like the Fisher & Paykel or Samsung. Those have a lot of torque. That's why they use them in them washing machine motors,
right,
washing machines now. I mean, you think about how much water and clothes weighs inside there.
Turn it back
and they're
and
able to
forward.
Turn it.
Slosh. That takes a tremendous amount of torque.
So far we got steam technology, we got induction heating, and one other one that I mentioned earlier. What the heck was it? Steam, induction, and compression ignition.
Compression ignition, yes.
All right, so imagine this all as one unit, this electric motor, that when you fire this electric motor up, it starts to run this like an air compressor.
Right.
So all it's going to do is keep pushing that piston up and down, producing friction, which in turn is going to produce heat and start to warm it up. Because when you compress a gas, it gets hot.
It's your starter motor.
Yeah. So when it gets to the point where the where it's up to operating temperature, and you begin to inject the water into the cylinder, and it instantaneously flashes the steam, which then in turn expands how many times its volume?
1,600.
Yeah, 1,600 times its volume. So that'll produce enough pressure to push that piston back down. And so when it's on its way back up, between the temperature and the compression, when you crack a water molecule from the hydrogen, separate the hydrogen and oxygen, you get electrical charge.
You're right.
So between the heat, the compression, and that minor electrical charge right in there, you would quite literally get an explosion and an implosion at the same time, because you have oxygen and hydrogen.
Exactly.
Now here's the thing. You're running this motor right here, just like the old style tractors had what's called a motor generator.
Right.
And when you start it up with the starter portion of it, it's using it one direction. But once that engine gets up to speed, then that generator, the starter, now turns into a generator.
Exactly.
So could you visualize a unit like that was a motor generator that basically uses electric to get it started up to operating
right.
temperature, plus the induction heating, which this induction coil wouldn't have to be on all the time.
All the time, exactly.
It only has to be on, and depending on which metals you use inside there, like if this was a stainless steel type of cylinder,
right.
stainless steel, because of its makeup, actually gets hot faster than like regular steel.
Right.
And so you can get that thing glowing red hot if you wanted to, but the key is, it would very rarely have to come on. Just
right.
like the glow plugs in a diesel engine, you don't need it until the temperature drops
right.
down. So if the temperature is regulated, when it needs that extra boost of heat, it would kick on that ZVS driver and fire up that induction heating. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to work on right there. That's one of my projects.
All right. That is a killer project because, oh yeah, I've tried to explain it several times on the show that as a motor, as a reciprocating motor, you put your water vapor, okay, you're not vapor, mist.
Yeah.
Alright, you don't want it turn into a vapor of steam. You want it as a mist, so it's actually water molecules. And you put that in the cylinder, and you already got your air, and the piston comes up and compacts it. As it compacts it and compresses it, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter on its own, because it's compressing the heat right along with the oxygen and the air. Well, you don't even need oxygen. It would
it's
work good with
any
gas.
Right, it's right inside the fuel.
Yeah. And the thing is, the more you compress or put pressure on water, the higher you raise the boiling point.
Yep.
So the slightest little bit of heat injected into this is going to get hotter and hotter and hotter until it's way above the actual boiling point. But your compression of your piston is keeping the boiling point so high that it's not, until the magic moment when it breaks over top dead center and starts down. It's releasing the pressure. As it releases the pressure, the boiling point lowers fast, very fast, and that all that water starts turning to steam over and over and over again because you added that tiny bit of heat as you were compressing it.
Yeah.
Now, to compress it without adding heat would do nothing because it would undo the pressure on the other side to the same as it was before.
That's why from start to finish, the slightest bit of heat, that fuel.
Just before top dead center, just before the slightest bit of heat to give time to circulate through that mist of water and the compressed air, just enough time to give it that heat transfer through, then all of a sudden you break over, and as your piston comes down and releases the pressure, that boiling point drops drastically. And it starts building that steam, and just, I mean, as it comes down, it just gets more and more powerful all the way down. It's an amazing idea. It truly is.
Well, that's why I don't understand. You know, I do kind of sort of understand why the mainstream auto industry hasn't really, like, you know, took it to the extremes, because one of the things that people always holler about is the laws of thermodynamics, and they don't understand. They always like talk about you can't compress liquid. Well, no, you can.
No.
But you can turn that liquid into a gas.
Right.
And then turn around and compress that. Well, in that process, you didn't violate any of the laws of physics
exactly.
to do that. No. And if you understand how the molecule actually works, and that if you crack that thing apart, you know, then you actually release an electrical charge, which when you start in a fire, you need what? You need three things. You need a fuel source, you need oxygen, and an ignition source, all
exactly.
three of which you can get from compression, ignition, or that electrical charge, either way. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
By the way, have you ever heard of anything called a reverse steam engine?
No, but this would kind of run like a steam engine for a moment.
It will run like a steam engine, but I'm talking about a reverse steam engine. Remember the ferries that gas sent us? They actually made several and used them as ferries to cross the, wasn't the Potomac River or the Chesapeake Bay. And what it did is they had a steam cylinder just like a steam engine, but as it would fill, it would just fill with pot boiling steam.
Yeah.
No pressure. Then, all of a sudden, when it came around to come back, you had all this steam in there, it closed down. And you just cooled the cylinder off. And the vacuum, as the cylinder cooled and the steam compressed, it turned into water, it would suck that cylinder back in and operate the vehicle. So it was actually, you took steam and turned it into water, and it drove the ferry. And I mean, we're talking big boats here. And they used them for several years to cross the Chesapeake Bay.
That's another thing that I was wanting to mention as well, is that you could actually regulate the temperature of this engine by the way that you put the fuel in.
Exactly.
So, you know, all the laws of physics are there, you know.
Yep.
And it doesn't violate thermodynamics in the least. It's using every bit of what you got, just like your two-stage oscillator.
Right.
When I'm looking at it, I'm seeing there's leverage involved in there where you're able to, you know, lift a heavy weight on this side with just a little bit of force this way.
Right.
So this is what I keep talking about when I talk about the dream team. You get these brilliant minds together that think mechanically and, you know, can engineer, you know, electrically and stuff like that, and then somebody with an understanding of how energy actually even travels. That's what I do mostly. I study not just the energy itself, but actually how it moves from point A to point B.
Right.
That's what that experiment is behind you right there, because it's taking DC and then changing it into a pulsed DC and then turning it into an AC, and then it's bouncing back around to it's changing that energy, the frequency of that energy throughout the entire system, storing it, building up pressure, using it all the way through the entire deal. But what it shows is the multiple stages of how you can actually change energy.
That's the secret word right there. You cannot create energy from nothing. Nothing begets nothing. You must start with something, but the laws of physics says this can be changed to that, and that can be changed to this, and if you put that and this together, you get, oh Lord, what'd you get over there? Come on, folks.
Well, also the key to what I'm trying to say is that when you start off with a certain amount of energy, there are no losses in the system unless you don't use
exactly
that like, for example, those transformers, they will leak out magnetic flux out of them because of the way they're designed.
Right.
Now, there wouldn't be nothing. Thomas could probably say, do you know of any material that you could actually 3D print a ferrite core custom? Like, if there was a way to take that resin over there, like I showed you on that one 3D printer, and mix in powdered ferrite and be able to actually 3D print a core. Imagine if you took magnet paper and you put your maximum voltage to a coil that you wanted to build a transformer for. So you're just going to take the size of coil that you want, and you're going to hit it with the power. And then with that magnet paper, you're actually going to see the toroidal effect of the magnetic field, and you'll know exactly, you can measure it out, exactly how big that core needs to be. And so you'd be able to 3D print it from the math that you do from measuring the deal. So the problem with these right here is the magnetic flux is doing this, and you got a square core.
Well,
so
yeah,
most of it's leaking out into the atmosphere. But if you had that core all the way to the very edge of that magnetic field due to its strength. So if you're only putting 12 volts to it and it's only going to make a field that big, then that's how big you want that actual core to be, so there's no leakage.
Right.
Every bit of that flux is being used. Right. You see
now,
what I'm saying?
Here's this trick. I don't speak Thomas Anderson clearly or proficiently, but I do understand Thomas Anderson language a little bit, and you tied his hands. You tied his hands. You said, can you do this, this, this? And then you tied his hands with a lariat called a 3D printer.
Yeah. Well,
can he do what you want without a 3D printer? Or do you want to just say, can you do this? And leave it
to increase your efficiency. I would say the easiest way to do it would be to,
right,
in case any openings where the steel is facing out to the outside world, with this method to force, like putting walls up where water is coming so it catches on the wall like a curb and follows the wall. You put that up against the edges so that it forces the electromagnetic field that's coming out
back the other direction.
Because it actually creates its own electromagnetic field to
right.
respond
well,
to
see,
it
even that's a,
pushing on it.
Even that's a brilliant idea
because
business has a low melting point.
Yeah. Can we back up for a minute?
Yeah.
Go back to... you guys are talking about the reverse steam engine.
Right.
You're talking about burning hydrogen. If you have an extremely cold motor,
right,
like the piston is extremely cold, it's made out of a combination of materials so that it's extremely thermally conductive, and it's surrounded by something cold to suck the heat out as fast as it can, you fill the chamber full of hydrogen and oxygen, pack it full. There's nothing but hydrogen and oxygen in there. Deep compression, you spark it, you cause the explosion, forcing it to go down. The explosion is essentially turning the hydrogen and oxygen that takes very little energy to get it moving at 900 miles an hour, bouncing all over the place like a bunch of balls, pushing on the piston, pushing it back. So that's what creates the heat. But when the explosion happens, the extra heat and the heat from the previous explosion, because it's so cold in there, the particles, when they first form of water, are going to be moving at almost the same speed because they're still at a steam state, so they're going to be bouncing against those cold walls and very quickly dissipate their heat, turning back into a liquid. So after it goes all the way down from the explosion, let the heat subtraction compress the water back into a liquid state to create the suction so they come around and suck it back up.
Right.
Now you're using energy from the explosion and the contraction of the water instead of trying to maintain the heat in order to create the explosion, because hydrogen and oxygen are highly volatile, so you don't need the heat to make sure you get the ignition each time.
Well,
and they
brilliant.
Have their source.
That's
so you
what
double
I was
your
earlier.
Output.
Put this together with that together with this, and all of a sudden you got that over there. And whoa! Totally different thing.
See, folks, that's what I'm talking about. That's what the dream team. You need to build a dream team in your local neighborhood. I mean, you go around and find the folks. We got somebody from Arizona. We got somebody from Texas, somebody from Missouri, and somebody from the Netherlands. There's four people in this room troubleshooting an idea that we just kind of threw out there on the table. with Raymond's two-stage oscillator. When I was watching his video, I noticed that in his contact points, he had these sparks going on there. And I'm, you know me in high voltage, I love that because that tells me there's a lot of power going on there.
All the sparks now, you can put that on Jermaine.
Well, back
Jermaine is the genius behind that.
Back in the old days, whenever they had point-style distributors, the points would burn up real fast, and so they had to figure out a way to save them points, and so they put a condenser on there as a basically a shock absorber.
Right.
But that means that there's power available. You know, just like everybody's trying to capture the back EMF on there, what you've seen over there, that rotary spark gap behind you, when you seen that going around yesterday, right back there on the table.
Right, yeah.
Well, that is catching back EMF off of that spark gap.
You know, when you made that comment in the comments on that my little two-stage prototype oscillator that we made in the shop that Jermaine put the electric magnetics on.
Yeah.
When you made that comment about the fluorescent light, Jermaine instantly knew what you was talking about. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the kid is something else, man.
Well, because
he understands enough of the electronics so guys like you and Thomas can give him a suggestion. He knows what to do with it. I have no idea. I'm strictly mechanical.
Well, it's because there's just a tiny bit of mercury in those bulbs.
Yeah.
And so it will become conductive, but after a point, it will actually turn to plasma. That's how you get the light from these fluorescent bulbs. And so it won't be a dead short on that deal, and it will absorb that shock just like the old style condensers.
Right.
So that's a pretty brilliant idea there, man.
Yeah.
But either way, I see a whole lot more that you can do with that, you know, deal right there. And even if you wanted to kind of modify the way that you guys are actually using those points, that rotary spark gap. What? Oh,
time.
8:43.
Brother Thomas out for a station ID break.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well,
I'm recording a behind the scenes of the Mad Science Show.
Cool.
Video, so I wanted to get a time to kick it over, start the next file.
So. All right, yeah. So we could do that here in a minute. Take a quick music break and see how things go from there. So anyway, I'm loving this because we got four brilliant minds from all over the place that we're sitting here troubleshooting. You know, your project and mine and. Thomas, you got a project you're working on you want to talk about now or you want to do it later?
The beautiful part is we're all in the same room at the same time.
Well, yeah, that's the whole key.
I got stuff I can talk about that I'm not working on.
Yeah.
That we talked about that maybe somebody else can work on, maybe you guys can work on or whatever, but the stuff I'm working on, I'm kind of hesitant to say this, but I guess I should just go ahead and say it anyway, even though it's going over the air. I had a conversation in February with a friend. I won't say who the friend was on Skype about 3D printing technology that I was working on and theorizing and developing the process. And there was a component to it, meaning what we wanted to use it for, that I thought would be extremely disruptive. So I was very cautious about how I would discuss that aspect of it and went from Skype to Talks, which is a decentralized voice, video, and text chat that uses a bunch of different people's talks clients on their computer. When they turn it on, it allows them to be used as nodes, kind of like dark web, where the rest of the world can't see it, and it encrypts everything you send out, and then it breaks it into pieces, the encrypted code into pieces, and randomizes it, sends it out. So now you don't even have the proper order that it goes in order to decrypt it. And it sends a piece this way, a piece that way, a piece the other way. So you might have a piece of your discussion of the words like, I'm sending this message. The I and half of am might be sent to Japan and then down to the person. The other two portions might go through the Netherlands and another part go through Canada before it gets to them.
You're talking about a website that you can send secure messages, very secure.
Hold on, it's not a website. It's an individual client.
Okay.
There is no central location
like
a website, so there's no way to track it.
To send secure messages now, with nobody listening now, to me except the person you want.
To go back, okay, I had my conversation with him on there about the part that I was exceptionally concerned about because I didn't want it to disrupt that ad, that market or that sector if it got out, because it could cause a major problem if anybody thought that somebody was even working on that. And I included while I was talking there about some components to the 3D printing process that I was talking about. And then we went back to Skype, finished the conversation. 2 weeks later, all of the conversation, almost word for word, that was on Skype showed up on Wikipedia. And neither one of us put it up there. If we had, for one thing, we would have included the stuff from Pox. All of the information from Pox was missing, and some of the components for making the process work for the 3D printing is absolutely essential to make it work was on Pox. So it got rejected. It's hidden as a draft. Some human came along and rejected it. And I say human because there were 10 pages written and several other pages modified to add this information onto it by this individual, all containing over 10,000 characters of text within less than 36 minutes.
Wow.
And then that user, after making their account to log in and set that all up, logged out and never logged in again. And I didn't see it until almost 8 months later.
Hey.
Three, four months later. So this is why I don't discuss the stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's understandable.
If I'm concerned about how I want to release it, because I don't want this going to big corporations that will bury it, will regulate it, will try to finagle to have laws passed that you and I can't use it. I want it to go to the individuals and move it slowly.
That's his biggest fear,
through
right
the ground,
there.
So that way it's not evaporating into
what he's doing and use it for military use. What he's working on
is
individuals to better mankind.
Well, that's what's good.
I don't mind it being used for military use, but I mean like individual military. That means like Second Amendment. The individual gets first crack at using this.
Right.
Well, that's what's good. That's what's good about what we're doing out here is we're pointing out old research, you know.
Right.
And Stephen Givens out there, he's put together a resource page. I don't know if you guys ever seen it. I don't know if I want to click on it because I think it's got an auto program that plays on it.
I got you. Right.
So, but anyway, if you go click on this link, it's got links to all different types of researchers with just about everything you can possibly think about, different types of YouTube researchers and all different alternative energy devices and so on. But it's a really valuable resource that Steven's put together for us. So anyway, I think we're going to go ahead and take a quick music break, and then we'll get back with everybody. Stay tuned. This is going to be pretty interesting. Like I said, this show's going to take a life of its own today because it's not pre-scripted. But you hear how we're sitting there troubleshooting different ideas that we've got. That's what I like. That's what the Dream Team's all about. And if you can actually get a Dream Team put together in your neighborhood, then that's how we're going to get things done. I mean, we the people get things done, and like Thomas said, not to put it in the system's hands. Yeah.
Okay. Before we go to the break, I want to suggest that we have a conversation about how if they can't create their dream team at home, how they can contribute to creating a position where they can join a dream team. Say during their vacation time each year to get some work done on something they want to work on with a large group of people who all have a safe, comfortable place to work. They also have a safe, comfortable place to live while they're there until they're done. Not going out in the middle of a field and trying to cobble things out in the grass while living in, you know, tents. But like you show up, there's little apartments. There's a big metal building for everybody to work in
with a machine shop,
another room, another building that has like an RF lab. So if you start working with something and create a wave that might disrupt, you know, radios and televisions and cell phones and stuff like that for hundreds of miles around because you discovered
some new technology, not just a metal building,
but you got a metal building with insulators pointing inward, and then there's chicken wire or some other retina type technology,
like a Faraday style cage,
right? So it maintains all of that. So that's your RF lab, and then you've got a chemistry lab where there's nothing but chemicals, cooling units, ventilation system and glass labware galore, so you can set up whatever you need to make whatever, say you want to make nanoparticles for something.
Yep. And I accidentally, because I don't know the first thing about electronics, I accidentally built my laboratory, my shop, and it is RF. I mean, you go inside and you lose all control outside.
Well, that's this building we're in right now. You can't get a good cell phone signal in here. You got to go outside sometimes, depending on how good your phone is. But
here's another thing, too. What if you're trying to create a communication technology that you want to break that barrier? You have to have the barrier in order to test to see if it breaks through.
Right.
Yeah.
So, say you want to build technology that transmits communication through gravity waves.
Right.
That's the theory. Well, you build the RF lab, you set up a communication device that's using the component you're wanting to work with outside and one inside, and see if you can penetrate to get to the person on the other side. Then you can test distance if it is gravity-based, because you shouldn't be affected by the planet being in your way. You could be on one side of the planet, like on North Pole, and someone be on the South Pole, and your signals will transmit straight back and forth to each other, as if you were talking on walkie-talkie, looking at each other.
Yeah, I have no doubt in that possibility, because the Earth is full of minerals, piezoelectric crystals, irons, and nickels. And
exactly.
Well, there's other stuff we could talk about, too, without having to get into anything somebody wants to wants to conceal, like solar lifting, where they're talking about using technology to mine minerals out of the sun.
All right, well, that sounds brilliant. So we're going to take a quick music break and then come back and hit it again. So stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science Show here at www.shazazradio.com. I need to shorten that. Just go to Shazaz Radio.
There you go. That's the way I do it.
I lose oxygen in my brain when I'm trying to rattle all that out in one breath.
Tell them to use those tools that are available on the web. Go to DuckDuckGo if you don't want to be tracked. Go to Google if you don't care if they're tracking your search history. And just type in Shazaz Radio, 1Z, 1I, 2Zs.
Yeah.
Don't spell it backwards like I do all the time, where I spell it S-H-A-Z-Z-I-Z.
I do it once in a while myself.
Right.
And I like
and it'll take you straight to his
I also really like that idea Tom has just talked about if you don't want or can't get a dream team together in there, but you'd like to be part of one. Hey, that's one of the good things about Skype and how we all got together here. We can find places to meet in the middle to get things resolved. So anyway, stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
everybody, so we're back. So we got Jermaine here all the way from the Netherlands.
Yeah. Jermaine Fishwick.
Jermaine Fishwick. We got Raymond Head here from
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. We got
Thomas
Anderson from
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
And I'm from the Sticks, man. I'm in Missouri.
Oysterbike. Yeah, he's from a little town in the Netherlands. That's Jermaine from in the Netherlands called Oysterbike.
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 Well, I couldn't even pronounce that.
I could tell
you that the best looking super geniuses come out of Missouri.
What do you think?
Oh, Lord. Come on, man.
Are you sure you're not from South America?
Okay.
I got a friend.
A while ago, Jermaine gave his YouTube user ID, but Jermaine's a little bit camera shy and he doesn't want to talk, so I'm going to tell people. It's Jermaine, J-E-R-M-A-I-N, apostrophe S, space, experiment, space, lab. Please, please, go to this kid's website on YouTube and watch some of his videos. You will be amazed. Remember, he's 17 years old and has 2 years of college behind him. And everything he does, he tries to make it like an art object. I mean, you people would be amazed. Just go and watch some of his videos, please.
Hot shoe.
That's Jermaine's Experiments Lab on YouTube. Don't forget to comment on the S on Jermaine's.
Let's see. I'm trying to find a better place to set this so I can actually
see what it's doing. Why don't you, like, I'll just go over to my YouTube channel, and I will, let's see if I can figure out where I'm at. Okay, my channel. Because if you go over to my channel, you're going to find a link to Raymond's YouTube channel and everybody's YouTube channel and Jermaine's YouTube channel. Let's see.
Okay.
They do channels. So I'll get I'll just copy a link to Jermaine's and throw it into the super chat room so everybody who wants to support Jermaine can run over there and subscribe to him. Let's see. Where are you at in there, Jermaine? There you are, Jermaine's lab. Ta-da!
The thing is, Jermaine and I have been discussing a few projects for him to work on when he gets back to the Netherlands. So he's going to have some really exciting videos coming up. Very exciting.
Well, I tell you what I like watching is the craftsmanship and the work that you do, Jermaine. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love your videos.
Hey, my wife fell in love with it 2 days after he got here. She called a lawyer wanting to know how long it was going to take to adopt him. I called his dad and told him, I said, you're not getting him back.
All right, what the
By the way, his dad's name is John Fishwick, and his main hobby is rebuilding old farm equipment, especially tractors. And the man, it's like Jermaine, I think that's where Jermaine got it, his artwork. The man is a pure artist when it comes to revitalizing old tractors. I mean, he's amazing. He really is. I went to a few tractor shows last year with him when I was over there to show off some of his tractors. He let me drive with his baby doll himself.
Yeah.
Beautiful little tractor. That thing runs like a Singer sewing machine.
I guess I might have to try doing that doggone tiny URL deal because for some reason it's not showing up. Oh, hey! All right, so let me go to Tiny URL.
Yeah, but you said you were talking about using a motor that's powered by that uses a generator as a starter motor and converts and then changes it to a generator. We have a generator that we got from my granddad's farm in England, and it's a 7-horsepower Lister Petter engine, and it's a diesel 4-stroke. And I believe that the cylinder itself is a separate component, so we can just take the cylinder out, leave the head on it and the block itself, but take the cylinder out and put a, you know, like a sleeve in it, so we can wind it with coils. And I think it's the perfect thing to experiment with that idea with the
induction.
That sounds brilliant.
Yes, it does. So, like I said, folks, pay attention to Jermaine's website on YouTube. because he definitely has some very exciting projects coming up, and you're going to be amazed at what he's done with an old Lister gas engine that he got from his grandfather's farm that had been back in the back of the farm, all rusted up. People didn't even know what it was, but him and his dad knew the instant they saw it, took it home, and Jermaine, under his father's guidance, rebuilt this engine and makes it run like brand spanking new. The kid is amazing.
Cool. Yeah, well, that's an already existing one that we could actually get speed up the process, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Well, that's
taking old technology, bringing it back to life, and studying how it works so that you can understand the new technology.
And that's the thing with old technology. A lot of mechanics nowadays they think too complicated.
They can't
figure out what's actually happening because there must be like. A lot of electronics tell me what's wrong and everything.
Right.
But it's just a lot of mechanics you need to understand, the basics. And if you know that, you can just fix everything of that time era because everything follows the same principles. It's simplicity, it's reliability, and it's easy to, restore.
Right.
All right, folks, there's a tiny URL in there. Let's see, Jermaine's. Ah, oh, doggone it. This is bad for live radio. YouTube. I'll do it again.
Hey, you should mention that the behind-the-scenes video and audio of the conversations will be on Rhead 100, too.
Yeah, cool. That's right. Thomas is videotaping this, so you guys will get to see it later. You get to see us all, and you're being crazy and stuff. All right, so I'm gonna repost that in there. So if you want to check out Jermaine's YouTube link, that's be in there. Anyway, I like what you was saying there about old technology, Jermaine. You know, I'm into plasma technology. And
we don't have any idea about that.
Oh, really?
We didn't know you were.
All right, well, the Mercury Arc Rectifier. Hi, Mom, I'm on TV. The Mercury Arc Rectifier was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and had they known what they had back then, there's some amazing technology going on there.
Right.
And I was trying to look up these old radios from back in the 50s. The car radios had vacuum tubes in there.
Right.
And so they had to have some sort of high voltage going on.
Right.
And so they
cut.
Yeah.
The battery's dying.
The charging system. The charging systems in those must have been amazing in those old style cars.
Yeah. Well, you know, the old cars that had the generator in them, they were so dangerous, it was unbelievable.
You mean the dynamos?
The dynamo. Yeah. Well, some people call it dynamo, some call it the generator, but there was a little difference, but very little. But those things would put out low voltage, but such high amperage.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they could kill you.
That's all one battery was.
Oh, wow.
I mean, nowadays, you grab a hold of a spark plug wire, you can get a tingle, a bug crawling up your arm, or whatever, But those days, they could actually kill you. I mean, fast.
Especially those 6-volt systems, because of the low voltage to get the power through, they relied on the high amperage draw.
Right.
Cool. I want to do the same thing.
The thing is,
I don't care about me because
a lot of people don't understand that voltage doesn't kill you. Voltage is nothing more than pressure. I mean, after all, it was three years ago, I was here with Shaziz, and we were messing around with 20,000 volts, and he got shot several times. Ticked me off, made me angry. He wouldn't do it while he was on camera.
Yeah, well, that's...
Kept teasing him. Do it again, Shaziz.
That's the thing, before I forget about it, there is a book out there. Go look it up, Secrets of the Alternator. It's where they show you how to pull the diodes out of an AC Delco alternator, and you can get 120 volts AC out of it.
Right, yes.
Actually, you can get more than that out of it, depending on how fast you spin it.
That's right.
And then, the reason why I like plasma technology is because the way that we're pulling energy off of these generators, the moment you turn that light bulb on, those electrons flow right through that light bulb, and guess where they go?
Yep.
Right back into the same exact generator. So that's when the lens effect starts to take off, And so the more light bulbs you turn on, the more path that you give for more electrons to flow in there, strengthening that field, and then you get to the point where it's acting like a brake and slowing down the armature. So in the study of trying to figure out how energy travels, that's why I'm talking about plasma energy, because where the laws of physics say energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it could be changed.
You're right.
And so just by taking the energy off of there from this stage right here, that's what that experiment behind you is all about, is to take that energy and change it to multiple different forms of energy and then back into usable current later. Well, that plasma is energy. When you start off with an amount of energy, the only reason you have any losses is if you don't use what would have been naturally a byproduct like heat.
Well, now, here's the thing. Several times on the show, you've said that copper wire is nothing more than a road or a railroad track.
Well, it is railroad
track. The thing is, there are many types of electricity. There's many types of light. And each one has its own path that it'll follow easier than another path. So what you're doing is taking electricity, changing it to several different forms of energy, and giving each one its own path so that it flows more evenly.
Well, and also Thomas mentioned earlier bismuth, because bismuth has a it wants to try to reject that magnetic field as it's coming towards it. It'll push it back the other direction.
Just say it's a diamagnetic. If
someone
wants more details, go to Wikipedia and look up magnetism and read up on diamagnetism, and you'll understand that what's going on is it's a weak field, but it is actually mirroring, not mimicking, the magnetic field that is introduced into it. So if you have a magnet that you're holding out in front of you, where the north is facing out from you and the south is facing back to you, a piece of steel will create a magnetic field where the same is applying, where the same field on the magnet that you are holding while you bring it up to the steel, that same field will be facing back at you and the other field will be facing forward, and the steel is attracted to the magnet. A diamagnetic field points the opposite, the one that's pointed away from you. That field is pointed back at you from what it's generating, and it repels away from you.
Okay, so the point...
Also, just to give you a little bit more information on that, to kind of cook the brain here, bismuth is extremely resistive as a conductor. So if you put it over layers of steel, the steel itself will actually be electrically somewhat isolated from the other layers of steel. Mm-hmm. As the eddy currents form in, say, laminated steel. But, what was I trying to say? The electrons, basically, they're going to conduct from the eddy currents more easily. Like, it's so resistive that the steel itself is actually more conductive than the bismuth, so the bismuth will act to some degree like an insulator on it.
Cool.
So, and that's how lamination works, is you're creating isolated magnetic fields in your eddy currents, that they actually, each layer counteracts each other.
Right.
Well, why not double down on that with the bismuth?
Well, the key that I wanted to get to, which that's brilliant, because when we're talking about losses, that magnetic flux going out into the air, that's a loss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you can use the bismuth to redirect it back into the same coil you're trying to pull power from, that makes it more efficient.
See, that's the beautiful part about us getting together when we do, even on Skype. Thomas got an idea. I'm not electronic, so I get an idea mechanically. You're into getting energy to flow certain means in a much safer and more efficient pathway.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned,
so we put our heads together. Next thing you know, we come out with something.
It's only a loss if you don't use it.
Right.
You know, and here's another thing too. Anytime you use any form of energy, you generate heat, all right? And so that's one of the bad things about when we make electronics, because everything has a thermal breakdown and it'll fail. But I'm looking at heat differently nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, look how much energy it takes to run an electric heater.
Right.
All right? Well, there's things that we do that we generate heat that we don't want heat in. And so instead of wasting the energy, like, for example, these computers running, after a while in here, these computers will actually heat this room.
Oh, yeah.
Just from the heat sinks and the transistors.
We have four human bodies in there.
Right.
Yeah.
The last time I'd heard, a human body is like a 100-watt thermal generator. your computers are probably 200 to 500 watt thermal generators, and because they took very great care to create those semiconductors to control the electron flow, the same technology used to control the electron flow so you could have the discrete circuit also creates a very discrete generation of heat so that you don't have thermal vibration that's being built up into it
right.
that's counteractive and therefore canceling its own heat.
Right.
So you get a lot more heat for a lot less wattage out of that thing.
So when you go back and look at old technology, and you look at like the mercury arc rectifier, and I keep talking about a plasma reactor. All I'm talking about from that point is basically what they did back then. They needed to be able to run Edison's old AC or DC elevator motors.
Yeah, right.
And when the AC current came in, it wasn't going to run that elevator motor. So you got two of the same, pretty much the same energy, just different waveforms going on.
Exactly.
And so they had to figure out a way that they could run these AC or these DC motors, and that's where the mercury arc rectifier came in, by putting the AC current in there and getting that mercury inside there hot and vaporizing the gas, turned it into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma.
Right.
That pressurized that tube.
Right.
And it's still the same energy. And so far we didn't get any loss, with exception of maybe, you know, some radiant coming off of it, or, you know, even light or anyway. But what we've been talking about, like bismuth and stuff like that, there's ways that you can contain that energy so that there are zero losses.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, to bring things more efficiently. And so if I want to pull energy off of a generator, and I know that doing it the standard way means that if I hook a light bulb up to that, that as soon as that light bulb comes on, and, you know, like a tungsten element's a resistive load, even if you put, you know, like halogen inside the bulb to make it even brighter, but
right.
it's still, that
it's still
heat is resistant,
energy. Right.
and that still allows current to go back into the same generator
right.
I want. But see, the thing about plasma, that's why I was telling you use that fluorescent bulb for a like a shock absorber
right.
for that deal, so it wouldn't burn your points up. But that plasma won't allow the pressure to go back the other direction, won't allow the electron flow to go back this way, because now it's acting like a rectifier, and the energy, because it's pressurized, is going out the other
right.
way, just like the mercury arc rectifier.
Right.
When they first turned that mercury arc rectifier on and hit that little pool of mercury, it was a dead short. It got hot instantaneously. But the
and
moment
it's already a liquid, so
yeah.
once it gets hot into a vapor instead of a liquid. If you look at just a little piece of trivia too, for people to look up a little more information on how to use mercury.
Yeah.
Go to Cody's lab and look up the I guess just do a search for mercury and vacuum pump, because he uses dripping mercury to
right.
create a vacuum pump.
That pump is called a Sprengel pump.
Sprengel, yeah. It's
yeah.
like
cool.
one of the first high
yeah, it's what Edison used.
Right.
So
and this is the thing. He
well,
has a radiometer attached to it, which you need that vacuum in order to allow the light
right.
to force the thing to spin around. But you need a little tiny bit of gas in there. Well, he used that to vacuum that out to see if he was getting down to the vacuum he needs to make it work. And he got it too low where it wasn't wanting to work. And then the mercury, because it was such a high vacuum, started evaporating into it. And the mercury vapor in there actually made the radiometer more effective at spinning around from the light hitting it.
Cool.
So. What Jermaine just said,
I like Cody's lab. He does. He's done a lot of crazy stuff. Did you see he flushed the toilet with mercury once?
Yeah.
just so anybody wants to look up Sprengel pump, it's
Sprengel.
Yeah, you're right.
But if you just look up mechanical mercury vacuum pump on Google, it'll probably pull up the Wikipedia page for the Sprengel pump, and then you can go look up all the details so you can build one yourself if you want.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be able to get down to the level of vacuums that you have to have a two-stage vacuum pump normally for, because the one stage will still not be able to pull hard enough to draw it down, so you draw a vacuum on that, and then the other vacuum is pulling down and pushing into that other vacuum, so it's easier for it to push the last remaining bits out of it, because it's not pushing against one atmosphere pressure in our atmosphere.
The old style radios in the car, they had to have some high voltage involved in
it. Oh, yeah.
and all them old plasma, all them old tubes had argon in them. They were, the old vacuum tubes had argon in them, and that you could see when they lit up, man. And you know, some of them must have had neon in there because some of them had orange colors too.
Right, they did. Well, I remember.
But they were using plasma technology back then.
Right.
Right. And so what I'm talking about ain't no hoodoo voodoo version of plasma. All I'm talking about is taking the energy that already exists, changes it to a completely different form, and then moving it
and
down the line.
And use it more efficiently.
Yeah, okay. Way from that generator.
Now, because I listened the other day and I heard a lot of inaccuracies, can you tell me, in 10 words or less, what is the plasma state? What makes it different from a liquid state, a solid state, or a gas state?
Well, basically, you got
10 words or less. You're on the clock.
Argon molecules moving really fast, banging into each other, producing friction, which in turn produces light, which in turn produces heat.
Right.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Plasma state is any matter that has been stripped of its electrons. So you now have proton energy only. That's all it is. You can make anything into a plasma.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's where how the fuser works.
The one that I wouldn't want to make into a plasma would be hydrogen.
Well, this is the thing.
Really?
No, listen. If you strip the electrons off of hydrogen and you have a central core that has a negative charge, that like just a ring or something, a wire, the hydrogen that now no longer has any electrons to keep the protons from rejecting against each other, right? You don't have a balance anymore, but you've got a negative state that is attracting that positive charge, causes them to slam together, and you get helium. Cool. If you have enough pressure, you can turn that all into helium. And you keep thinking they're going to get all this excess energy out of it, but it doesn't look like that's actually where we're going beneficially, because you need gravity, immense gravity, like in a star, to create the fusion that generates excess energy. So it's actually the gravitational pull where the energy is coming from. In this case, though, it does have a benefit. Helium is a noble gas, extremely small, very difficult to turn into a liquid state, so it can handle extremely low temperatures, and it is used primarily as a necessity, not as like a frivolous thing like making balloons or blimps or something like that, but for MRIs. And when you crack loose negative charge, that like just a ring or something, a wire, the hydrogen that now no longer has any electrons to keep the proton.
There we go.
No. It's the delay between the live broadcast and what we're saying. Okay, the helium is necessary for MRIs, so they can see inside your body before they start cutting you open to do work on you. When you release the helium from wherever it's trapped on the Earth in order to collect it, it works its way up to the surface of the atmosphere eventually, and then the solar wind just blows it away. And all the helium coming from the sun hits the top of the atmosphere and just kind of drifts around a little bit and gets blown away. So you will have to go into space to get more helium for your medical MRIs, unless we find a way to use something like hydrogen that will react with oxygen so that it will get trapped here long enough that we can collect it, crack it apart, use the oxygen for whatever, save the hydrogen, and compress it into helium for your MRI, the fly. You no longer have to go to space, you just need electricity, which you can make from all the energy coming from the sun, as it is.
Well, one of the things that you were saying earlier that I had the thought about was the excess energy. Here's the thing, folks. When they talk about zero point and over unity, I couldn't care less about zero point or over unity.
Exactly.
Now, if we got to that point, that would be kind of cool. You know, I'm getting out more to put in. But that's not what this whole deal was about. What we're talking about is super efficiency.
Uh-huh. Right.
Using everything to its maximum potential, using the known laws of physics, and how would you say undebunkable?
Oh, yeah. The truth?
Yeah, the truth. So, you know,
undeniable.
Yeah, so all I'm talking about when I'm talking about my plasma technology is changing the energy so I can get the best results out of that amount of energy and not violate any of the laws of physics, one of which would be the lens effect, which causes that generator to slow down. And so that's where all these people who want to build an electric motor generator, where they take electric motor and then they take a generator head, that's where they always fail, because you know, you put the energy to it, and you can get a lot of voltage out of it, even more voltage than you actually put in, because of the RPMs, but you're not going to get enough power to overcome that, because the moment you put that under a load, you drag this down, which drags that down and causes you to draw more power on the input side.
Okay, listen. The more voltage is only if you are either...
higher RPMs.
You're building basically a step-up transmission, or you can do an electronic step-up transmission where you've got thinner wire wrapped many more times inside the generator than you do at the motor, and just direct drive it, and now it's actually generating a higher voltage because of the more coil. So you're basically doing almost the same thing as you would do if you wrap a transformer with, say, just a flat sheet of copper to run through, and on the other side, it's a little tiny, as everybody else calls it, the magnet wire, the enamel wire. It's wrapped many, many, many times around, so that one wrap going around that flat sheet is now energizing a thousand coils, and you get a thousand-fold increase.
Well, I took a little hard drive motor, and I actually got a video out there. I took a little hard drive motor and I spun it up to about 35 to 50,000 RPMs with a Dremel. I was able to light this entire strand of LEDs that normally take about 120 volts to plug it in the outlet, but I was able to light it up with a little hard drive motor.
Yeah.
When you take that hard drive motor apart and you look what's actually inside there, it'll blow your doors off because there's hardly any copper in there.
Right, right.
And there's the magnets in there are not really strong at all. It's just a little tiny.
I mean, it's smaller brushless than motor. 38.
Don't be surprised if it blows up or something else goes wrong, because many of those are inside of a sealed chamber with air pulled out of it.
Yeah, but the point I just wanted to make from that, there is a lot more energy. Just in a simple 9-volt battery, then, you know, I understand. A 9-volt battery, you put it on a load that's drawing a lot of current and all that kind of stuff, that battery ain't going to last very long. But it's not the energy that you got. It's how you're using that energy.
Right.
And these little tip 42C transistors for the Slayer exciter circuit, all that's doing is ramping that, turning that switch on and off, ramping that voltage way up there. And that's what I'm into, because voltage is pressure. If I want to move something from point A to point B, I take a note from the power company, which does exactly that. They ramp the voltage way up there, higher frequency, and they shoot it down the power line so they can get more. And they actually even got places where they can actually boost it up on the way by.
I'd want to look to see if it's higher frequency. I think it's the same frequency, just higher voltage, higher pressure, in other words. Running a much smaller hose, but you get a lot more water running through it because it's running at such a high speed.
By the time
that jet, and then they step it down, like you said, on the transformer.
Yep. By the time it gets to that doggone transformer, you couldn't run that wire straight into your house and set your house on fire instantaneously.
Yeah.
By the time it gets to that transformer, there's a couple things going on. First off, that transformer is actually a combination capacitor / step down. And so that capacitance inside there is enough to drop that frequency range back down to the 60 hertz that you need to run inside your deal at whatever, service, like 100 amp or 200 amp or a single phase, dual phase, or triple phase or whatever. They can customize.
Think about it. Your scenario in explanation of what you're doing, you keep saying things about a swimming pool. Well, let's put it this way. Let's say you've got a hose here, and it's a power washer, right? And it's putting out 4,000 PSI. You put that in a water balloon, and before you blink your eyes, your water balloon is busted.
Yeah.
But you still throw it and fill up a swimming pool. Now, all of a sudden, you take, a soda straw, get some water out of the pool, and blow the water balloon up, But what you're doing is those capacitors in these, what you mentioned earlier, they call them substations that, take the power as it goes, 20, 30 miles, put it in a substation and boost it back up again,
Yeah.
But your swimming pool theory or scenario is perfect explanation. You're taking a lot of high voltage and dumping it into a swimming pool so that you build your volume, which is your amperage.
And the capacitor technology that we've got available today is so incredible, these supercapacitors, because their charge and discharge rate is rapid.
Right.
And so with high voltage, at a high frequency, you can charge that thing so doggone fast that you can keep it filled up. You can keep it pressurized. And as long as you're draining some, it won't be like your balloon blowing up. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But capacitors will self-discharge if you get too much power in them.
Right. Okay, you got
basically five... Basically like a compressor and a buffer.
Yeah, you got five power washers filling a swimming pool. Now, all of a sudden, the swimming pool is full, and it starts to overflow. This is your run capacitor. That overflow, you're taking it out as an overflow. It's real smooth, and you're distributing it out over other lines to different households.
But the key is, in that entire process, we never once went over unity. We never once went 0 point. All we did was move this energy from this point to that point as fast and as efficient as possible.
Exactly.
And at higher voltages and higher frequencies, you don't have the resistance like you would like trying to cram a lot of current down a pipe or a piece of wire or whatever.
Right.
And that current, you know, trying to cram too much amperage through a wire is going to cause it to get hot. So the way that I'm talking about, you're basically getting almost into the realms of cold electricity where that wire is not going to be resistant of that. And so that wire is not going to reach its thermal breakdown and fail.
I'm glad you said that. I've owned several power washers because we use them in my construction company quite a bit. And it's amazing how you can hook up to a cold water tap where the water's not cold, but, you know, it's cool to the touch. Yet you put a power washer to it, and you used to grab hold of that wand, and the more you use it, the hotter that wand gets because of the friction of that water.
Right. You're trying to cram too much current down the small pipe.
Exactly. So,
And isn't that what brings the cost down, you know? Thinner gauge wire, more voltage, you get the same power through.
Right.
You
know? Exactly.
That's the thing. And seeing that, there's another portion of the deal. When you talk about physics, and you know, like, if you compress a gas is going to get hot.
Yeah, because you're compressing the heat right along with it.
If you, and that's the same thing that's happening with that water, you're actually compressing it because you're trying to cram it down that metal pipe too fast. But
and the heat's got to go somewhere. So
if
it goes
you
out
notice, maybe this portion of the deal is hot, but once that hits that atomizer and bursts out into the air, that water instantaneously gets cold as hell.
Yes, yes. And AC, I have done that. I've taken a coil and rolled it up before my wand, right?
Yep.
Now the pressure is from the motor, from the pump itself, to the wand. And that hose, if you put a coil in there, and stick it in a bucket of ice water, then you get pure ice snow out of the end of your wand. I'm serious. Well, it's wild, man.
They figured out how to do that. That's why we got air conditioners.
Yeah, that's exactly how an air conditioner works.
And I even believe that there's super efficient ways to actually do the air conditioners without having to have a compressor to compress it. There's other methods that you could actually use by... You know, maybe even using the heat of the sun to heat it can change. You know how hot it gets inside your car?
Oh, yeah.
During the summertime?
More than hot enough to operate a thermal air conditioner.
There's been some places where the car got so hot inside there it pressurized and blew the windows out of the door.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Absolutely. You know these propane gas lighters? Cigarette lighters like this one I've got in my hand right here? I had one of those sitting on the dashboard of my truck one time, and it was in the sun, and it was there for about an hour and a half. I was inside measuring up a job to bid, and I walked out, opened the door of the truck, got in, and that thing exploded and went right by my head. I mean, it was crazy. Boy, it was
every
crazy.
Summer, when I go up to my shed, my over the night, my gas can... Uh-huh. It's got a lid on it, will contract and it'll all scrunch in like that.
Right.
And so I go out there and I set it right out there in the sun for a little while and it heats up and the vapors pop it right back out to where. That's knowing physics is the easy part, and taking and using all those doggone physics as pieces of the puzzle in the right order to get these things to be so incredibly efficient. This is what I'm talking about. When I explain that motor, the water engine that I'm talking about, it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet, and it's also the most destructive. It's the most powerful if you know how to use it. And so if I want to use water as a liquid, I got hydraulics. I can use that to raise up a bucket of rock, gravel or something, because I know that I can't compress that, and I can use that is the hydraulic fluid.
You know, I've said several times on this show, I've done the math on this, and I've done experiments to prove it, that water is 3.7 times more powerful than gasoline and air. It's somewhere like 3.9 to 4.2 times more powerful than dynamite.
If I could get somebody who owned a machine shop just to humor me, not try to debate with me why this will work and why it won't work. I got it in my mind mechanically, and I can draw it out on a CAD program and show them what it is that I want them to build. I know that we could build a car, an engine that would run on pure distilled water.
Oh, yeah.
Just using the water alone.
Right.
Because from start to finish, like I said, water is the most stable molecule, but it also has, if you know how to break that down into, it's no longer liquid, now it's a gas, now that gas can be compressed.
Right.
It can be heated up, it can get all the way down to the point where you can actually crack the hydrogen and oxygen on demand without having any electrolysis involved in the deal, using diesel technology, compression ignition, you know, when that piston's going slamming up there, the next bunch of fuel go in there, between the temperature and that pressure, it instantaneously, ignites.
Right.
You don't even have to have a glow plug anymore.
But the problem I see is lubrication, because water isn't lubricitous, or whatever you want to call it, doesn't lubricate. You can, because the way you're using water for this motor, you don't rely on heat, you don't rely on the expansion. You don't rely on the same heat as a normal traction engine would.
Now, go ahead. I want to hear this. Go ahead.
Well, if you do that, because the temperature is lower, a lot lower, will be controlled a lot lower than a combustion engine, you can change the piston out for a Teflon piston.
Yeah.
Or something that is lubricitous
by itself. Anything that doesn't exceed 300 degrees Fahrenheit.
I told you, the kid is a genius. He said exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
There are plastics out there that their melting point is over 600 degrees.
So if you had a 600 degree piston, then that's more than what you need, and it's self-lubricating.
250, 275 degrees is more heat than you need in a steam engine to actually run.
Because we're not actually talking about starting a fire inside that. We're just using the hydrogen implosion and the oxygen explosion at the same time. You're getting a double bang in that piston, and that dang piston, made properly, it would hold up. You could make the rods and cams and everything.
There are plastics out there that melt at 100 degrees higher than Teflon. They are three times more friction-free than Teflon. And
that was a good
50%
one
tougher than steel. But however, they do have a low coefficient of the transfer of heat. So you would need some sort of metal portion, like stainless steel or whatever, titanium, that you could actually run it in to get your heat off your engine and quit.
Right. But you were additionally talking about using induction technology to preheat the cylinder, right? Well, if you make an induction ring out of tubing, and when it's up and running, you can pump water through it to preheat it before you put it up, before you inject it in the cylinder.
Yeah.
So you can control the heat of your...
You could actually regulate the temperature deal.
By preheating your water, which is a good thing, you know?
Yeah. You get all them little molecules all excited before they get up there, and by the time they hit that sonic vaporizer, they're already pre-primed, and once they hit that temperature, 300-degree cylinder inside there, instantaneously, poof, you get a flash.
Well, here's the thing. You put it in before, and you let it compress. It's compressing the air and the liquid.
See,
it's an actual liquid. It's not vapor. What am I calling it?
Mist.
A mist. And you, as the piston comes up, it's compressing all that air and all that heat that's in the mist itself. You can get it hotter and hotter. So that when it reaches just before top dead center, all it takes is the most minute amount of heat to increase it just a tiny bit.
Well,
and then when it breaks over, as it comes down, it's releasing the pressure, lowering the boiling point, and the water turns to steam. Violently turns to steam.
Yeah, under the right circumstances, it's not only pressure that can cause an explosion in a boiler system like the nuclear power plants. You're talking about extreme heat, extreme pressure, and quite literally being able to crack the water molecules. So they actually had a hydrogen explosion when those doggone nuclear power plants popped.
Right.
Right? And so this is what we're talking about. Little miniature hydrogen explosions inside the doggone piston. And right. Like Jermaine said, with the certain types of Teflon or plastics or whatever, they only have a melting temperature, you know, whatever they got. But as long as you don't exceed that, the weakest part's going to fail. And if you never exceed the breakdown temperature of that piston right there, which you don't need to.
And that's the whole thing, like Jermaine and I were saying, there are plastics out there that have all the properties that we're talking about to build an engine like we're talking about that is by far superior to any steel or alloy steel that you can possibly name.
Yeah, and the best part about it is the exhaust is water.
And next best part, second best part, it's plastic. It's dirt cheap.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of possibilities. Folks, that's why you need a dream team in your neighborhood. And you get your dream team on a Skype conversation with this dream team, and you guys got something you're working on over there. There's so much research available out there. Go up there and look at that link at the top of the Super Chat. Click on that. It says Steven's resource page. He's compiled a whole bunch of information for you.
Oh, by the way, can I put a little bug in somebody's ear about the Netherlands?
Yeah, go ahead.
And their scientists over there? They have recently, in the past year, come out with a biodegradable plastic that you can actually eat. I mean, you throw this plastic in the ocean, it will biodegrade and fish and eat this stuff.
Well,
I mean, how cool is that?
Well, I think that there ought to be a big old recovery of the plastic out there in the ocean anyway, because that's a viable resource.
Exactly, it is. It really is.
I mean, at the right temperatures, you can melt that stuff down and make petrol out of gasoline.
The beautiful part about it is most of your plastics, you don't have to heat it to its actual melting point. You can melt it down until it gets soft, apply pressure, and it will actually bond to itself.
Yep.
You can make sheets of this stuff. And like I said, plastic is very poor a physical conductor of heat, so you can actually build plastic walls to a house, and in doing so, build it similar, not exactly, but like a beehive, and fill the holes with carbon dioxide, so you've now created a plastic that will not support combustion, but could actually put a fire out.
Yeah.
So if you, instead of sheet rock, which I'm hurting my own business, instead of sheet rock, you would have plastic panels, the same thickness, but built like beehives, full of carbon dioxide. So if you had a fire, it would melt the face of the plastic, and the carbon dioxide would come out. It may not put the fire out, but it could help control the fire and give the firemen time to get in there safely. Because the firemen nowadays wear oxygen masks when they go into a fire. Well, duh, if you fill the place up with carbon dioxide, the fire is controllable to where the firemen can get it out.
Well, there's all kinds of, it just blows my mind because this earth is an amazing recycler. There's nothing on this earth that ever gets wasted. And what we're talking about doing with energy and different materials out there, man, it's like a gold mine. There's a dump. If we got more time, I'm going to take you down here and show you this dump. It's a landfill.
Right.
And back when I was a kid, when we drove past there, it stunk, man.
Yeah.
There were birds flying everywhere and flies. And, you know, it just smelled terrible. But these folks, somehow or another, got it in their head about recycling, and they started a system up there. If you go look, drive past there and you look up at it, you'd swear it was a park. It doesn't even look like a landfill. But they take and they recycle everything that comes in there. So they're basically charging you to take your trash away from the curb.
Right.
Then they take and they separate your trash, and then they sell your trash to different markets.
Right.
And they use some of it, like the biological kind of stuff, you know, like vegetables and fruits are rotted or whatever, to make methane to run their trucks and machineries.
And they also, in fact, Dallas-Fort Worth, a landfill in Lewisville, Texas, for years, they've been doing exactly what she is talking about. They put the trash and garbage in layers, and then they put layers of dirt over top of that. And each layer has its own piping system to to pipe the methane gas off.
Yep.
For over 15 years now, they have been piping gas to a building, a little bitty building, that burns the gas, makes steam, turns electricity. You pay them to take your trash, they turn it into electricity and sell it back to you.
Yep.
I mean, what a business, man. The people bring you your raw products to make your product out of, pay you to take it off their hands, turn it into a product, and turn around and sell it back to you.
Well,
I mean, that is amazing.
That's the thing that's amazing about here in the United States is even though these people are so doggone wasteful as far as what they throw away to the landfill or,
right,
you know, try to give away to somebody else, all day long, if you got a place to put it, you can go take a pickup truck all day long and drive all over the place, and people will give you washing machines, dryers, old electronics, and furniture, you name it. They want to get rid of it.
They recently, very recently, in the past year, year and a half, discovered microorganisms that actually eat plastic.
Well,
they exist in nature. The problem is we're creating plastic faster than these microorganisms can consume it.
Well, that's why I said that the people out there who believe that, you know, plastic is going to last for thousands of years in the dump, they have been. I go out metal detecting all the time. I find all kinds of degraded plastic in there that hadn't been there for thousands of years, that's for sure. But nonetheless, nature will break down anything that mankind has built. And so with that said, that should teach you something about efficiency, like what we're talking about with energy efficiency, right, and even re-engineering the internal combustion engine using all the different types of materials we have available. There's no reason why we couldn't do it.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, like I said, there are microorganisms that will break plastic down, but we're making plastic that only they can break down faster than they can break it down. And that's why I brought up the scientists in the Netherlands. They have developed a plastic that is biodegradable.
Do you know?
It has no ill effect on the environment.
They make plastics that are not only temperature resistant, but they also make some that are incredibly tough. Back when I was younger, I worked at a place called Modern Plastics. And they made pulleys for Ford Motor Company, lawn and garden pulleys for Daco and stuff. These were made out of a 70G33 glass-filled nylon. And these things, you almost couldn't break them. I mean, you could bang them on them, and they held up. So if you bought one of these pulleys, the only thing that could fail on it would be the bearing.
Right.
So, you know, that was years ago. Imagine what they got now.
Really?
Incredible technology. But if you make something like that, imagine if you use that type of material to build rafters for your houses or whatever. You could use the geodesic dome style structures, you know, all the geometry of that, and you got a super strong house that ain't going to degrade.
Right.
And it'll hold up just like steel, man.
You know, most, not all. There are some high temperature plaques, as I've already mentioned, that don't melt until they're 650 degrees. But most of the common plastics that are used today get really, really soft at 425 to 450. They don't melt. And in that softness, they get soft enough that if under pressure, they will actually bond together. And if you don't believe me, take one of your electric griddles that's Teflon coated. Take a milk jug, cut it up into a bunch of pieces, take four or five milk jugs, a couple of glass water bottles, plastic water bottles, cut them up in a little bitty chunk, lay them about an inch thick on your grill, and then pull the lid down and put about, you know, 20 or 30 pounds of weight on top of it and turn it up to 400 degrees and see what happens. Duh, after it settles down, about a half hour, 45 minutes later, turn the grill off, open it up, and if when it cools, you've got a solid chunk of plastic, a quarter, 3/8 of an inch thick. Really hard.
Well, what you was just saying there, while you were saying what you're saying about how I missed a deal there, but how you were saying about how you can bring this plastic down to make it really super soft, I was thinking about energy storage.
Right.
Because imagine you got doggone plastic and you get it hot. Once it's at that temperature where it's all real soft,
right,
that plastic will hold heat for a long
time.
And so you got energy storage in that plastic. Right. So you don't bring it up to combustion, or you know where you know basically catches on fire. You just bring it up hot enough to hold that heat. You could store heat, right, quite literally.
Right.
And so imagine you did that, and then you got thermoelectrics involved in this deal. So once this thing gets up to temperature, you get it hot, via the sun or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Here's the thing, like you said, what if you take, for example, copper pipe or plastic pipe even. Well, no, you wouldn't want to use plastic pipe because you're going to heat it. But you take copper pipe, make you up a coil, then you embed that inside of a big chunk of plastic.
Yeah. Right?
Now, to do that, you're going to have to heat plastic to start with. So now all of a sudden you got all this heat. But think about this. Once that heat's gone and you run water through your radiator system in that plastic, now you're using sunlight to heat water to run it through to reheat the plastic so that you can use the plastic to heat your house at night. And yeah, here is a beautiful thing. I don't know if anybody out there has heard of aerogel. But 1/8 of an inch thick aerogel, you can put a crayon on this and a blowtorch, one of those handheld propane torches at the bottom, and the crayon will not melt.
Yeah, there's a video right there on YouTube.
Unbelievable insulation.
Guy's got his hand on one side, yeah, and he's got the torch on the other side of that aerogel.
Right. So now if you took, say, a cubic yard or a cubic meter of plastic with a piping radiator system in it, covered it with 1/8 of an inch layer of aerogel, which would cost a fortune, but it could be done.
Yeah.
And you would have a heat, and then of course you build a solar hot water heating collection system in the wintertime, you could heat your house at night with no problem. I mean, totally fucking free. I mean, excuse me, it's totally free, but, what was I going to say? I blew my
hook. I don't know.
That was the first time I've ever done that. I'm sorry.
Because it takes a lot of... Because it costs a lot, so what?
Yeah, it costs a lot.
Have you heard of soapstone?
But the thing is, you can set the system up where you don't even need a pump. It will thermal siphon.
That's another thing that I like about...
I want to apologize to everybody out there.
It's another thing I like about the whole, knowing what the laws of physics are actually about. See, some people look at the laws of physics as, a fence, a roadblock. You can't go any further. I use the laws of physics to my advantage. I know what the cause and effect is because it's been, researched through scientific method. And so knowing that, if I don't want to invoke Lenz effect, I'm not going to invoke Lenz effect. I'm going to change that energy to something else,
get it
away from the generating source, and then change it back to what I need on the other side.
Exactly.
So by understanding that, I know that I can move energy really fast. And if I can move energy really fast and using modern day technology, as far as capacitor technology and even battery technology is getting better, they got combination battery and capacitors. They call them bat caps. But either way, knowing that you can store that energy, you can change that energy. Every bit of what I got going on, every time I show one of these experiments on my YouTube channel and I get some jerk that comes in there and starts mouthing off about how, oh, well, you're not getting free energy and it's not getting more out than you're getting put in. I'm trying to show these guys something that it's the same doggone energy that I had to start with. I haven't lost anything.
Right.
Everything that I sent in is here and then it's there. And the only losses is whatever I don't use. But if I'm using a plasma reactor and I'm gathering radiant energy, I'm not wasting that energy.
Right.
I'm sending it back down to capacitors that are recharging and going back and zapping that coil and igniting it again. What the heck? That was Patty's. Hey, Patty, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. We got a pretty good show going on here right now. You're live.
It's me, Barbara.
Oh, Barbara. Well, it said Patty Walking Turtle and T. Williams and... Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. What's up?
We got Jermaine Fishwick from Holland.
Yeah.
We got Raymond, or yeah, in the Netherlands.
Right.
We got Raymond from Texas, and we got Tom from Oklahoma. See, don't ask me. You're going to kill me. I keep saying he's from Arkansas.
Well, welcome aboard, everybody.
How you doing, Pat?
Barbara. It's Barbara. It's okay. We're sisters. Patty and I are sisters, and we're often confused.
Yeah.
Not we're not confused. The people are confused about who we are.
Like me, old Zena, like me.
Well, I heard Ted in there too. How you doing, Ted?
Good, I'm good. How you doing?
Pretty good. We got an amazing discussion going on about energy transfer and all that kind of jazz. So we got Jermaine over here, and he's helping Raymond with some projects that Raymond's got going on, and Thomas is down here with him. Everybody's at my shack.
We're all here in one room.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. I'm happy for you, Shaziz. You kind of like been wanting some people to come in and join you. And how did you guys get connected in here?
Well, this is the dream team. Raymond came down years ago, and then he had an opportunity to get Jermaine over here to work with him. And so while Jermaine's in the country, he brought him down here so he'd get a chance to do a radio show live with me. So he's sitting here right in the Shaziz radio studio right now.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
and what you said in the country, where are you from?
He's from the Netherlands.
From the Netherlands.
Oh, wow.
And, a lot of people get mixed up. They say Holland, but Holland is just a state, isn't it?
Holland is a big province where a lot of tourist attractions are. So
right.
They call
right.
it Netherlands Holland because it has
all
the stuff.
Oh.
Okay.
Cool.
But, so the Netherlands is, Holland is just a big part of the Netherlands. The Netherlands is the actual country itself. And Dutch is what they call the people. And I got to see where they make the, how they make those wooden shoes. It is amazing. In fact, I got the video of it on my channel, and I don't even want to.
Beverly's got a picture of her sitting in a giant wooden shoe.
Right.
Because we went to that.
They still wearing those wooden shoes?
Oh, yeah. Jermaine's got his own pair, so does his dad and mom.
Huh.
They still when
so they're making them out of hemp?
Can you dance with them?
What kind of wood do you
No, they're made out of wood.
I know, I'm just saying. They could probably make them out of hemp.
I think they're made out of pine. No, willow.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick music break and get some refresh on some coffee. We're going to come back. If you all want to stay with us, you can join us for the last hour of the show.
Okay.
All right, everybody, listen to Mad Science. We got Barbara Three Crow on here. We got Ted Williams. We got Jermaine. We got Raymond. We got Thomas. And Crazy Haired Shaziz. So we got one heck of a show on the way here. So stay tuned. Peace and love, everybody.
персональный спутник.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
I really love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. It's Jermaine, it's Raymond, it's Ted, it's Thomas, and not me because I'm a perfect angel. And you can believe it because I said it. And the best looking super geniuses come from Missouri.
Good.
What do you think of that, Ted?
I love it, dude. I love it.
All right, so basically, we had sort of a discussion there for a second ago, you know, about energy, whether it being free or not, or whatever, you know. Nature likes to stay in balance, and once you know the physics of what nature's going to do when you throw nature off balance, then you can get work done. So we're not creating energy, we're not destroying energy, we're just slapping the bee's nest, so to speak, or, you know, pushing a wave in the water, and in the process of that, we can get things done.
Right.
You know, you could have a really hefty character on a inner tube on the other side of the pool.
Right.
And if you sit there and work those waves, you can pop that puppy right off the doggone
inner
tube, man.
Oh, man, that's cool.
So that's leverage, it's hydraulics,
right.
It's pressure, all being utilized, and that's nothing fancy about it. You didn't violate any known laws of physics, and you were able to get somebody that's several hundred pounds off of an inner tube across the pool.
Yeah.
Now, I know that sounds crazy to some people, but if you talk to electrical engineers or even, machinists or, people that are into building engines or even electric motors for that matter, it doesn't matter. They got a set of rules that they go by, and that's that. There's nothing, no talk on the outside of what they're... It's not new. I think sometimes, unfortunately, some of the colleges are, being a hindrance. They should take, and when somebody goes to college, they should teach them what the book says,
right.
But inspire them to go outside the book. And that's what I like about Jermaine, because
yes.
He does just that.
Him and his dad both. They take old technology, bring it back to life, and in doing so, learn just how simple this really is.
Yeah. And it's amazing. If we could actually get the dream team... Ted, did I hear you say you got a dream team started in your neighborhood now?
It's John
Fishwood. I've been working on my dream team for about 3 years. It's been a lot of labor of love.
Yeah? Well, I'm trying...
Go ahead.
Living
with people is hard to get into. Sometimes.
Do you see how I spelled YouTube? YopTube. Jermaine's YopTube channel.
Oh, man. One day he'll be rich and I won't have a yacht, so I guess...
Hey, I never said that I was like a English teacher.
There you go.
All right, so anyway, basically, with everything that... all the talent that you got available in your neighborhood, somewhere in your neighborhood there's somebody who can weld really good. And there's a machinist, and there's electrical engineer, and there's electrician, electronics engineer, or whatever. You bring that team together, and then you allow those ideas to flow. The only issue that I've ever found is trying to keep the egos at bay when you get brilliant minds
right.
together.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
And I think we've done really good about getting past that, because we, just on our show today, we've discussed several different projects that, we kind of feed off of each other.
Right.
And even when, somebody says, well, that's not exactly how it works or whatever,
right.
I don't get upset, because it's a learning experience.
Right. Exactly.
I don't always have the proper terminology. I can see it mechanically in my head how it's happening.
Right. The thing is, at my age, I'm losing my vocabulary. And I can't think of... I know the words that I want to use, but I can't think of them. So I feel like an idiot sometimes, I know what I'm going to say, but I just don't know the right words to say it in, and I get confused.
Yep.
But anyway, I know what I'm doing, and it's kick butt.
So, Ted, you got any projects you're working on?
Well, I woke up this morning, and I don't want to go jump up and go to work right away or anything, so I laid there for a second and just wrote I remember my dreams a little bit, and there was something about like a worm earth generator, and I didn't know what that was. And when I
actually
and I don't know what it is, I know there's something there, so I started looking into it, and I was like, a static sensation device.
Yeah, go to look up the Hawksby device, Lord Kelvin, and Wimshurst is the other one, and the Van der Graaff. So there's four of them that all involve static electricity. And here's something I want to point out. People out there that don't understand, static electricity is really super powerful. You can charge in capacitors rapidly with static electricity. So I like the idea of building a Wimshurst or a Van de Graaff or even a Hawksby device or even a Lord Kelvin style static generator. A lot of them, you know, I mean, if it's raining outside, you got Lord Kelvin's generator.
Yeah.
Right? If it's windy outside, you got either Van de Graaff or what was the other two, I guess?
Well, Hawksby and
Wimshurst. Yeah, Hawksby and Wimshurst. But
they also have Foss and
who?
The Toppler, Foss and Toppler, and you have so many different electrostatic machines.
Yeah.
In fact, Germaine, at age 16, built a Wimshurst that worked.
Well, that's great.
A small one, about 12, 14 inches in diameter, and being camera shy, he didn't make a video of it.
Well, think about
I'm trying to get him out of that.
Think about taking your mechanical knowledge with your two-stage oscillator and mixing it with his Wimshurst.
Oh, Lord.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Every time that thing's going around. See, all you got to do is understand how electrons are changing from one material to the next. You know, just amber's a really good one.
Germaine had operated by large two-stage oscillator, and he was absolutely floored by the energy it put out with no more energy than he put in, right? And the thing was turning at like, 350, 400 RPM? And a Wimshurst machine takes very little energy to turn. And we're talking 80-some pounds, 80 pounds of energy moving 5 inches every 1.27 seconds.
The nice thing about a Wimshurst, you don't really have a lens effect. The only effect that slows it down is the friction of your bearings and the static disc that pull and push away from each other.
And that discharge of high voltage out there, you could actually use to store that power and then move it over to where you want to use it. You know, you actually change that power into usable current again.
He's planning on building another Wimshurst, and Thomas and I have already discussed getting some Teflon, pure Teflon slabs, and making them Teflon bearings for the Wimshurst.
Well, think about the doggone rubber on the tire.
Right.
All right, now, what other material can you rub across rubber that will give that electron the change that would actually produce
sheepskin? Cat fur.
So, you could build static generators in the tires of your car to charge power banks.
Well, they put grounds on cars these days. I mean, you know, you remember in the old days before they grounded the cars, that you'd walk up to your car, or somebody'd walk in your car, you had the engine running, you just pull up, stop, and they'd reach on and lay their elbow on the windowsill and get the heck knocked out of them.
No, I was telling you, when you get out of your car, to ground yourself to something metal before you pick up the gas pump,
exactly.
Otherwise you're going to blow yourself up.
Yes, exactly.
And that spark shoots across there. But that's a lot of voltage.
Yes, you always touch the truck before you touch the gas pump.
Yeah. But either way, it's just all this energy. It don't matter whether we're talking about static electricity, AC current, DC current, whatever frequency range, all of it is the same doggone energy. Mm. It's just moving faster or slower.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter. And so whenever you take what would have normally been waste, If you look at a doggone regular tungsten element light bulb, we use that resistance of the tungsten to actually produce heat that in turn is light. And somewhere I got some nichrome wire. And this stuff right here is, I think I was talking to you about a while back here, Ted, about this nichrome wire. If you can match the right frequency of this wire and you can cause this wire to vibrate, you're not going to be, this particular nichrome wire is actually made to resist current flow.
Exactly. So
that's how it gets hot.
Exactly.
But if you vibrate that at the right frequency, you can get that wire to get just as hot as it would have if you were trying to shove current through there. But the difference is that you don't need to near the input
right.
in order to get this wire to get red hot, because
right.
you're just matching the resonance of it and you're getting it vibrating, and you know it's going to generate friction, which in turn generates heat and heats up. So that's what I'm talking about. The power that we got, it ain't that we don't have enough power, we're just not using it properly.
Exactly.
We're not using it efficiently.
Exactly.
So, you know, there's some experiments that would be worth trying, is doing experiments at what frequency range will this nichrome wire start to resonate and get hot.
Using so much energy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's it. And the transistor technology that we got, they got a certain range because transistors are fast.
Right.
But people don't realize that transistors will work from a minimum voltage to a maximum voltage, and so by turning that down, you actually control the speed of that transistor. We can speed it up and slow it down, so get a wider range. That's how these signal generators work, you know, for doing different types of experiments.
Right.
And so, you know, with that said, that opens up the gate for a whole wide range of experiments and all types of different materials to see at, you know, what frequency range any material would get hot.
Right.
But imagine that, though. What would have normally been classified as waste energy, which is heat. In our internal combustion engines, we got to get rid of the heat because it generates so much heat because it's not properly engineered.
Right.
And I can say that because if you got an engine and it's vibrating from the rumble of the exhaust or the engine running itself, and it's made out of metal, what's that going to do? It's going to cause heat. So you're getting heat from that. You're getting heat from the frictions of the bearing. You got oil in there that you're using to lubricate it, and once it gets hot, its viscosity drops down, and
right.
so it becomes thinner, and then your parts will start to fail because they get too hot.
Well, you know, like if you're pulling a camper trailer or a work trailer, for example, with automatic transmission, your automatic transmission fluid will get extremely hot.
Yeah.
They make an automatic transmission oil cooler.
Yeah, they also make engine oil coolers.
You're throwing that heat away. They're throwing it away.
So take that engine oil cooler,
right.
hook a bunch of Peltier elements
exactly.
to it, use the temperature difference from the outside to the core of that
right.
cooler, and bring some of that heat back into electricity again.
Right.
So
exactly.
there is no such thing as waste energy.
It's
at
what
all.
You throw away.
If it's wasted if you let it go.
But exactly.
You didn't get rid of it. Otherwise, you'd be defying the laws of physics.
Let's talk about the efficiency of crude oil pumped out of the ground. Now, it takes anywhere from 40 to 60% of its contained energy just to produce it and transport it to the service station where you put it in your automobile. Now, what you put in your automobile, you've already spent more of the crude oil than you're putting in your automobile, and then your automobile is only like 22-23% efficient.
That's right.
So, you throw
that.
So for every gallon of crude oil pumped out of the ground used in an automobile, you're actually only using a couple of ounces.
Yeah. So, Mark.
I think people think that the statistics of how much water it takes to get something to you. You know, how many gallons of water, clean water, fresh water does it take to get the crude oil to your car and all that? Because even though it's taking energy to get it to you, it's also taking water to get it to you.
Yeah, they don't call them hydrocarbons for nothing.
You know, if they could just come up with a material that's salt, and other chemicals would not.
But wouldn't it be simpler just to humor a crazy-haired old guy and take the laws of physics and engineer an engine that would run on water? So I'm out of gas, right? I'm like out in the middle of nowheresville. There ain't no gas station anywhere.
Right.
And my car still run on any type of water. So all I got to do is go down to the local creek and get me some water, filter it through my T-shirt into the gas tank, and start my car.
You know, there's actually a way to desalinize ocean water, and in doing it, actually produce electricity, not use electricity.
Well, sure. And then the hydrogen production. There's so many different options that are available. The technology.
Like you were saying about the nitro water. I mean, if you had an electric motor and you had it in your car and you were working with the right frequency to run it, you really wouldn't need much current to run that electric motor that would run a car.
Yeah.
You could use it, what you were talking about, the same principle of the nitrogen wire. And one of the things we've been trying to understand, or I've been trying to understand is the availability of step-down transformers and how, well, if you want to do the same thing instead of a nitrogen wire or an electric motor, and you want to get some current, like, it's kind of difficult to find distribution step-down transformers that are small and can work with trying to create your own small amount of current. They're incredibly difficult to find. The only ones I've been able to get have been ones that have been gifted to me.
Well, I think that future technology, the future of cars, is going to be hydrogen technology, but not just that, hydrogen electric, basically like a hybrid kind of.
Right.
When you want the power, you know, like of the old hot rod days, then you give it the hydrogen boost, and with the electric transmission, that's why the Koenigsegg Regera and Agera, though, both of those two cars are the fastest production car on the deal, because they have a... They got a gasoline engine, but they have an electric transmission.
Right.
And so the torque is instantaneous on that. So all these people run around here bragging about the Bugatti and stuff like that, and Koenigsegg comes along and right past them.
Right. There's these cars that will outrace drivers. They've just got electric motors in them because how fast they pick up the electric motor. And like you're saying, the transmission like that, and it's like... You know, but they don't make any sound. They're like,
do you want to know why I said? Do you want to know why I said?
Two electric cars race because there's no like sound, even though they're going faster. It doesn't shake your whole body.
Yeah,
flames aren't the size. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like that's pretty interesting.
Ted, do you want to know why I said that? There'll be a combination of hybrid electric cars.
Because the hydrogen
technology, if you got a hydrogen generator inside this deal that is actually keeping your power cells charged up, you don't ever have to stop to charge your car.
Right.
And the fuel is free because all you got to do is wait for it to rain. The rain comes down the gutter of your car and fills your fuel tank up, and whatever's excess goes back outside.
And I want to comment on what Ted just said a minute ago about electric cars racing against gasoline cars in the sprint race. Not once has any car ever been made to drag race with gasoline beat a car that was built to drag race using electric motors. Not one.
Yeah.
In all the history of gasoline cars, sprint cars, and electric sprint cars, not one time has any gasoline sprinter ever outrun an electric. In fact, all the electric outrun them by at least a third.
Yeah, well, that's because it's an instantaneous torque, ground of the wheels, And with a gasoline engine, you've got all these little factors in between there that's going to slow you down. You got to wait for, if it's an automatic transmission, for the centrifugal force to get the hydraulic clutch going. And then that's got to transfer from that down the drive shaft down through the transaxle, whatever you're going.
Or with an electric car, you actually fasten the wheel to the shaft of the motor, and then you just simply use a rheostat for your speed.
It's an instant. You step on it, you're gone.
It's instantaneous.
I'm curious, guys, on trains these days, don't they use a similar system? Is it electric motors in the trains nowadays?
Yeah, each Each wheel on a train has its own electric motor.
Yep.
I thought it was something like that.
And most of them better. Nowadays are they have diesel engines that are only on there. They're not to pull the train. Diesel, they're to run electric motors.
Oh yeah.
Diesel electric, and they figured out how to use the electricity for the brakes as well.
Yes.
That's where Lean's effect comes in. Yeah. Hey, now it's handy. Let's use right. Lean's law.
You're using the electric motor to propel the vehicle, but your braking system is reversing it to make electricity. You can have to use it, and it restores your battery.
And once you let your foot off of the brake, that back EMF comes from that field collapse and goes right back into your battery.
Right back to the back.
Folks, it ain't that we ain't got enough power. We ain't never had an energy crisis. It's just that we got enough power. We just ain't using it properly.
Exactly.
When I tell people things like a 12-volt battery has more power potential than you could possibly imagine, it's not just when that battery's full. It's when it's empty as well. All you got to know is that if you throw those plates off of balance with electrons, one of them's charged higher than the other. Now you got a potential difference, and so you got a power bank. The same thing with capacitors. I showed Jermaine my gizmo out in the backyard from the Freethinkers video, and how many people do you think actually thought about using a dead battery with no electrolyte as a capacitor?
Right.
What's the dielectric in that? If there's no electrolyte whatsoever, what's the dielectric between those plates?
You got me.
Yeah,
I told you, I'm not electronic. You can do it.
The air, yeah.
The air
is a dielectric. It has to have a certain amount of breakdown voltage before it can actually jump across to those plates. So in between those plates is atmosphere.
Right.
And so until the voltage gets high enough to break over, you've got to charge.
Right.
It's a potential difference. And so a battery then becomes a capacitor.
Right.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I did that with a Jocell one time.
Yeah. A capacitor ain't nothing more than two plates.
Yeah.
And with something in there that's going to keep that voltage from being able to leap across that gap.
Right.
So when you pressurize those deals, if that dielectric's strong enough, it will not allow that to short across to the other plate. And so now you've got two terminals up here. That's the only path. And if they're far enough apart, they can't short themselves out.
Right.
So I figured that out a long time ago about how you use a doggone car battery as a capacitor. And that thing has been sitting out there for God knows, two or three years at least.
I built a small Jocell. I don't know if anybody knows what a Jocell is, but it's like what they call a water splitter. You put DC to it, positive one side, negative the other, and you put it in water with electrolyte being either salt or baking soda, baking soda being better. And it splits the water into hydrogen and oxygen. But you take that same Jocell and set it on your bench and let it dry, and you can take a multimeter and hit it, and it'll have a charge.
Yeah.
But take the voltmeter off, let it set, and do it again. It will charge itself from the atmosphere in the air. Very small, but it's there. It's free energy. There's no such thing as energy that's not free.
Well, that's the whole key. And where it gets muddied is whenever people start trying to misquote the laws of thermodynamics, and they're talking about over-unity and zero-point and perpetual motion. Here on Shazia's Radio Mad Science, we ain't never even tried to get perpetual motion, free, over unity, or zero point, but we will argue till the cows come home that energy is free. Matter of fact, I feel like we've already, ad nauseum, proven free energy.
You know, we've discussed the fact of automobiles. You've got to have a cab, otherwise the rain and the wind are going to beat you to death. So you have to have a cab. We've discussed the fact that air moving over certain plastics creates a negative charge on the plastic, and other plastics creates a positive charge. Right. So if you made the body of an automobile one side one type of plastic, the other side another type of plastic, it would not generate enough electricity to run your car, but it would generate enough electricity to recharge
but
your battery.
Just like the Free Thinkers series out there, it's pulling energy from the air, it's pulling wind power, It's pulling solar power. Right. It's pulling thermoelectrics. It's pulling radio waves. It's pulling galvanic actions from two dissimilar metals. It's pulling earth battery technology because, believe it or not, in your dirt, there's chemistry in there.
Right.
And especially when it gets wet, you'll get voltage out of that as well.
I've done that several times.
And so with that big swimming pool idea with the capacitors, I showed over there, we're funneling it into the big pool, and when the big pool starts to get filled up, where is it going to go? It's going to trickle down
somewhere
to the smaller ones, and all that, the tiniest one's going to be filled up first, the next one in line. Once you get that, all these down here, that your systems, they're going to run continuously as long as this one here never goes dry.
Right.
So you're dumping energy in from every single direction, and you can do the same thing to an electric car just by understanding the physics of the material, like you explained.
Right.
That's the whole deal.
I think of what you're saying, and I'm thinking about like the airframe of like advanced aviation craft, where the airframe, it is the capacitor and different layerings of materials while a plane, once it's in the air traveling at a certain speed, that airframe can capture enough electrostatic effects to start running it basically off of a spark, making it into a spark gap and an atmospheric pressure around the entire vehicle.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it, but actually go in and look out airplanes, looking for airplanes and lightning discharges and static buildup on airplanes, and see what the industry does to protect people from getting the crud shocked out of them.
Right.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Because you're one of the plates,
right?
The airplane is the other plate. You're different charge than the airplane itself. And so as that airplane's flying through and building up that friction of the atmosphere on the deal, how do they keep you from getting shocked if you touch anything metal on that plane?
So,
there's some tricks out there that people hadn't figured out. You know, people have figured them out.
Right.
But the average Joe just ain't, like, they don't teach you in science class these things.
No.
They will tell you because they don't want to blow up their gas station to ground yourself. And, you know, I don't think they're necessarily worried about you.
Right, they're not worried about you. They're worried about their
don't
fuel station.
Blow up our gas station, ground yourself. And that we don't want to take your charred body off of here or anything. It's bad for press.
It's like the video that's on YouTube where the young blonde gets out of her car, goes and grabs the fuel thing and reaches over and to put the nozzle in her tank, and it sparked and a big blue flame came out and singed all over her. Everybody was laughing about it. It's not funny.
No, it ain't. That's dangerous.
No. It's not funny, but the thing is, it's science.
Yeah.
Has she not?
Your cell phone do that. You know, your cell phone has that spark inside it. People don't really know it too often, but cell phones have been known to set them things off.
Well, using the kind of techniques and the stuff that I'm talking about, all the different laws of physics, there is absolutely no reason why you can't design a cell phone circuit that, while I'm talking to you, because I'm on a different frequency range than you are, I could actually have two separate frequencies going on. While I'm talking to you, the signal that I'm sending out is charging your battery, and while you're talking to me, same at the same time, that extra signal coming through there is charging my battery as well.
Exactly.
You get a little bit longer out of talking, you'd think somebody'd been all over that, man.
Right.
And wireless energy, you're surrounded in a sea of frequencies all over the place. If you got somebody smart enough to put a system in there just like your radio tuner, when you're not listening to any given radio station, that doesn't mean those frequencies aren't there. You got to sit there and tune it in to one you want to listen to, but they're all still there. So those are all potential energies that can be stored to charge that battery.
A perfect example of different frequencies is when you're sitting in the house Sunday watching the football game, and all of a sudden you hear, and all that is the weather stripping around the door and the wind blowing outside. The harder the wind blows, the faster it vibrates, changing the frequency, changing the pitch of the sound.
Well, you guys saw that last night when you guys came in, when I was running that. Yeah. I was actually disrupting these monitors over there with a pulse.
Yes.
So I started off with a DC battery, changed it to a pulse DC, then into an AC wave, and then down the line, to different ranges of AC right. current, and even high voltage, even to the plasma state, because they actually saw at one point I had that fluorescent bulb going,
right.
and plus all the neons on there. So there's multiple different examples of energy, but they're all the same energy.
And remember, I noticed that the monitor on the left had an absolute perfect pattern.
Yep.
So that was your actual frequency right there. The others were random.
But the whole key is that
what we've been trying to say
all along, we have never been looking for zero point or over unity or perpetual motion. Now, if we accidentally stumble on that, which may very well be possible, once you got the perfect equation of all these pieces of the puzzle, the physics in play, you know when lens effect's going to occur, and if you don't want it to occur at this certain stage in the game, you move it into a different form of energy, and then when you do want it, you want to use that lens effect to stop your car, you put energy to that, too much
right.
energy to that coil, and you got a brake.
Exactly.
That's how that works. And all we're doing is moving energy around. That's it.
Right.
We're not doing anything fancy.
We're not creating a daggone thing. We're just taking what's there and changing it to a usable form.
So those folks that like to troll us and get really rude about free energy, that's because they don't understand the basic laws of physics and science. It's right there.
They believe what they're taught in their school books.
Yeah. Well, I really like the radio today. They're kind of like the understanding of all the frequencies around, because I'm starting to look in, you know, like the cycle per second that is radio, and then the cycle per second that is what runs your appliances, and then seeing that, like, maybe it's true that with the right resistor or the right capacitor, you can change any cycle per second to another cycle per second if you understand American relay radio, then your parts and how to move the using like ohms, how to change, you know, these cycles per second that we consider unusable waves just traveling around in our air and cycling them down to what would run an appliance. And then quite possibly having nothing more than basically a radio receiver that has the ability, you know, maybe add an earth current.
Well,
you don't really need too much at all to run an appliance.
You can use transistor technology, and you can use capacitor technology to take really tiny voltages, stack them up into capacitors, and then have those capacitors dump into a larger bank. And so you could pull even the minuscule energies out of the air if you really want to do it.
Right.
And, you know, just what you said a second ago about most of these appliances out there, they don't need nowhere near the energy that we're using, and that's the reason why these electric motors get hot, because you're cramming too much current down there. It don't need it. All these fields have to do, all you got to understand is the physics of that magnetic field. When these two come in proximity to each other, they want to become one. Nature wants to balance it out, and if they're at the wrong polarity, one will push the other one away. Get away from me. I don't like you. It's different or whatever. You know, the opposites would attract them. So, anyway, when you're talking about radio, picking up radio waves, different things like that, I wanted to mention the germanium diode, because they have a sensitivity to radio waves. They're used in a lot of different, aspects, but those germanium diodes, that's what I used in there to build that little antenna that was acting as a receiver, because
right.
germanium's real sensitive to radio waves, that I'm actually grabbing some of those radio waves and storing it into AC capacitors.
The thing is, there are radio waves that exist in nature.
Yeah.
You're not stealing the radio waves from a radio broadcasting station.
Yeah, because after it hits my antenna,
right.
what's left over is going to hit the next antenna
exactly.
in line.
Exactly.
And the reason why that doggone radio wave changes after a while, gets weaker, is because when that wave is going out, it's smashing into stuff. It's slowing down,
right.
slowing down. By the time it gets so far out, it's not the same deal. But if you actually took your radio station and you dialed it back or forward,
right.
you pick that radio station up a little bit longer because you ever done that when you're out in the country?
Oh, yeah.
You got your favorite radio station, you got to sit there and jack with it so that you can get
to a certain area and it's real staticky, so you readjust it a little bit. Yeah.
You could actually build auto tuners that would give you an extended range on picking up those frequencies because it's the same message coming across, it's just slower.
But see, if you built an antenna to use a actual radio station frequency, then they can get on you because now you're weakening their wave.
Signal.
But their signal, yes. But if you built your antenna right and used it to collect only natural existing radio waves.
Oh, you can do that too.
Yes.
But
then you're not stealing anything from anybody.
Anything that goes past their customers is wasted energy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I could stand out there with a wireless AC tester and stand 30 to 40 feet away from the power lines, and I can pick up a wave coming off of that. And what's their easement? They got a 20-foot easement that they have over there? Well, if I'm 21 feet over on the deal and I got something that's going to pick up that energy that's wasted, I ain't stealing electricity.
You just said the magic word, wasted. It's being thrown away. You're not stealing a thing.
That's it.
I mean, if somebody walked by you with a hole in their pocket and pennies were falling out, and you say, hey, you got pennies falling, and say, I don't worry about that.
Pennies.
Then they're yours.
That's right.
You know, I mean, duh.
But look into germanium diodes if you get a chance to, Ted.
Yeah.
I think you'll like that.
I mean, that's where radio ends, like where it's like radio frequency at so many hertz goes to so many hertz, and then, what is the frequency 60 hertz is in? What do we call that? Was it electrical frequency? Not radio. They don't want to call it radio. So what do we call it? It's not light.
Well, every wave out there, regardless, it doesn't matter. If you take a battery and a coil and you tap on it, you're producing a radio wave. It's the same doggone thing. You take an AM radio. AM radios are like really sensitive to, be disrupted. And so if you just take a capacitor, charge it with a battery, and then short that capacitor out, it will send a wave through that you'll be able to pick up on an AM radio. So it's really ridiculously simple once you understand how that functions to, send out a radio wave. And you can actually, once you understand that, you can actually tap out a message and send it out. There you go.
Right.
So, everything's a radio wave. It doesn't matter. Once you pulse that coil, it's going to send out a wave that if you're tuned into that specific frequency, you're going to pick it up. Yeah. And so, if you got a receiver that will pick up multiple different waves, take that energy and store it into capacitors. When the capacitors get fully charged, they will kick over a transistor that'll dump that voltage all into a bigger container, and you get free energy.
That's it.
That's all there is to it. Somebody else paid for it, or even the sun or the stars or any energy, even acoustic waves, sound waves, piezoelectrics.
Yeah.
There's just so many different ways to gather up energy. And once people decide they want to do that, and that's when you're going to have perfect machines.
I was just thinking, years ago, 8, 9, 10 years ago, I took some just plain old speakers out of a sound system on a job, wired them up to my multimeter. I live under the approach landing path of DFW Airport. And every time a plane would fly over, I'd aim the speaker at them, and it would produce electricity. I mean, come on, man. That'd be a sound wave.
And here's the thing. Even when people will say that, it's not that much. It's just a tiny, what can you do with that? Battery technology. It's the same doggone thing whenever you take any cell, like a 1.5 volt battery and another 1.5 volt battery in parallel, you got 1.5 volts.
Do you realize?
Put them in series and now you got 3 volts.
I don't know anything about electronics. But I'm telling you, there's people out there smart enough to take their cell phone when they go to the nightclubs with this real loud music and to make their cell phone charge itself just from the sound of the music.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
The kids had tennis shoes with a piezoelectric crystal in it. Oh, yeah, as they're running around, it's bending that crystal and producing electricity and lighting up a light bulb.
You have a switch on your cell phone to put it over on charge. And aim your speaker to your cell phone toward the speakers of the band, It's real loud music, and it'll sit right there and charge the phone.
Yeah.
And you're not stealing anything from anybody.
No. Well, oh, I'll tell you what, man. I wish we had more time, but we're down there to it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just the stuff we talked about here today. Folks, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard
exactly.
enough for it.
You said that 3,000 times if you can.
Well,
and you're right, 100%.
The key is if you ever want to get off the power grid, if you ever want to get out from underneath the thumb of the system, then build your dream team. Dream teams get stuff done because the skills that I don't got, Jermaine has.
Hey, you
the
know,
skills
I'd really
that Jermaine
like to see
don't have,
do
Raymond
that.
Has.
I don't know anything about electronics, but I would love to see somebody do exactly what I said. Build a system to where that you can just, no bigger than the cigarette pack, that you can simply take out, set on the table at a nightclub, plug it in your phone, and it would use the sound of the music to charge your phone. I would love
would
to see somebody
ridiculously
do that.
It would
be done. It can be done.
It would be ridiculously simple with a speaker such as this one right here.
Yeah.
That this, if you actually look inside this speaker is plastic. It's got a plastic diaphragm.
Right.
And paper's obviously going to dampen the sound just a little bit, but it's still going to push it in and
right.
out like that. But plastic, on the other hand,
right.
is going to vibrate more.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's going to put out more. But they have little tiny headphones. These got piezoelectric crystals in them, but
right.
they do have little tiny ones that have plastic diaphragms in the speaker.
The diaphragm is the secret because
yeah.
the sound waves actually cause the diaphragm to move, which
but
excites
you could make
the
it
magnet.
Like a little piece of jewelry style.
Yes,
deal.
You could.
Plug it in your cell phone into your pocket while you're out there in a disco or whatever.
You're right. You're right. It could be made to look like a piece of jewelry, like a brooch you would wear. And all you do is have a little wire run to your cell phone in your pocket and then charge your phone while you're out dancing with your love, your sweetheart.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Think about it. This is amazing. I want to see somebody do that. I don't have the electronic technology to do it, but I know it can be
done.
Well,
just know that anytime you pass a magnet or a magnet through a coil of wire or a coil of wire across the magnet, you're going to get a change in current. So
right.
there's an AC current going on. All you need is a diode.
Exactly.
Which something as simple as an LED is a diode.
Uh-huh.
You get light. It'll light up every time somebody...
Oh, yeah, your brooch would light up and do all kinds of weird fancy lighting stuff.
And charge your battery at the same time.
And charge your cell phone. Heck, yeah. That would be cool. If somebody made one, I'd buy it.
Yeah.
I really would. Yeah. And I don't even go to nightclubs.
All right, folks, that's what a dream team does. We troubleshoot things, we think of new ideas, and just call us an idea factory / dream team, and that's what it's all about. And so if you're interested in any of this kind of stuff, we got links all over the place. Join us in a chat room. Join us on the radio show sometime. Ted, thanks for stopping in there, brother.
Great meeting you, Ted. Great meeting you.
All right. Well, everybody, Jermaine Fishwick, he's a man of the hour all the way from the Netherlands.
Netherlands.
Raymond's here a little bit closer. He's the second man of the hour because he's like all the way from Texas. Arizona.
Tom Anderson from Arkansas.
Arkansas. He's going to kick my butt.
Oh,
all right, well, either way, so you're the farthest away, he's the second, he's the third, and I'm the homebrew.
Oh, by the way, I want to plug his website.
Yeah, do that.
Jermaine Fishwick, and that's JARMAIN'S experiment/lab.
Everybody do us a favor.
Please,
and go over there and subscribe to his channel. Jermaine, I put it says YopTube because I don't know how to type.
Yeah.
But I probably don't even know how to spell at some point in the game, but YouTube is what it's supposed to say. But it says YopTube. It's in the super chat room.
Right.
And that's a tiny URL link to Jermaine's deal, so that makes it simple for those that, you know, couldn't catch what we said.
Anybody out there that's interested in old equipment that real genuine hands-on artwork needs to check out the Jermaine's father's Facebook, and that is John JOHN Fishwick, but it's spelled exactly as it sounds. Check him out. He's got some unbelievable videos of the tractors he's worked on. I mean, old tractors like 1942, 41. And what is that, the Fordson that he let me drive? What was it?
1921.
A 1921 Fordson that I drove in a tractor show last year over when I went to the Netherlands to visit John and Jermaine. I mean, it's unbelievable. Trust me. You're going to enjoy those videos.
All right, folks. Join us for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Same time, same place. And, we'll have probably more mad science tomorrow on the Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, Lord, yes. Knights of the Round Table is
take
all
over.
Yeah, mad scientists are in the house, and we're taking over. You got the dream team, so we'll see you tomorrow. Peace and love, everybody. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.